here to present. And of course also the health chairperson is gone on work out of the country. There are three members, Mama, there are three members of the committee, am I right? From health. What we shall do, we shall allow members of committees only to just introduce themselves very briefly. So-and-so from committee A, so-and-so from committee B, and so on. So that we don't waste time. We shall also have only a session that concludes before lunchtime, or by lunchtime. If you remember, we had initially scheduled that we shall go over even for afternoon, especially closed session for Naha. Unfortunately, at the time the submission went through, only the speaker can accept to such a request. So that's why we then had to cancel that session for Naha, because you're dealing here with a forensic audit investigation report. So that's a simple reason. No other reason. We shall then have to reschedule that session, especially when we come back. This is our last day here also for the term, and we trust that members are going to have the best of fun going out on recess. We have among ourselves, as I said, the three departments, health, trading industry, and also agriculture department, agriculture, forest and fisheries department. And again, the issue that we are about, it was in the news, it is about meat safety or inspection and also labeling. That talks much more to trading industry. We had also extended an invitation to the research team that published those results on the meat safety issues from UWC and also Stellenbosch. They shall introduce themselves very briefly as well. I think we should, without much ado, allow just very briefly the committee members just to introduce themselves. So and so from this committee, without making any wishes. Okay, my name is Lulu Johnson. Chairperson of this committee, Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries. Madam.
Good morning, my name is Annette Stein. I'm a member of the Portfolio for Agriculture and the Rest.
Good morning, my name is Peter van Dalen. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee for Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries.
Good morning, my name is Elizabeth Lissamshane, a member of Agriculture.
Good morning, my name is Seth Kwelema of Agriculture Committee.
I'm Mwababana, member of Agriculture.
Good morning, Khuyemure Shambonani, Shalom Abram, Agriculture.
Morning, I'm Leno Scala, member of the committee.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Margaret Twala, member of this committee.
Morning. My name is Rasha Kitolokoi, member of DAF.
Anybody else from other committees?
Good morning. I'm Beatrice Ngobo from the Health Portfolio Committee. I'm representing the Honorable Chair Gondwana, who is not there today. Thank you.
There's no other person from other committees?
interest of time. Quickly from agriculture.
Good morning. I'm Mike Mutisani, acting deputy director general for agriculture.
Good morning. My name is David Mugesi, PRO in DAFA.
From the Department of Trade and Industry.
My name is Andy Sabotwan.
Mamela Mutebe, Department of Trade and Industry, Agroprocessing.
Tiza Makulwani, DG's Office, Agriculture and Forestry.
Thank you. My name is Mant. Good morning, everybody. My name is Mant Desayela. I'm from the Department of Health. My portfolio is Chief Director.
Morning, Annelies Wattwelle from Department of Health, responsible for environmental health.
Malus Matala, Department of Health.
Good morning, Burton Joseph, Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry Department. Thank you.
Good morning, Joe Khasa, Parliamentary Officer, Ministry of Health.
Morning, my name is Kudabashi Magwile, Department of Agriculture, Federal Republic Health.
Good morning, Witsogan Sabele from the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries.
Good morning, Kevin Esmond from the Department of Agriculture.
Your name, organization quickly.
Good morning, Khaled Yedlin, member of the Red Meat Industry Forum.
Everybody, I'm Dave Ford, Chairman of the Red Meat Industry Forum.
Saroj Naidu, a Ministry of Trade and Industry, PLO.
Good morning, my name is Professor Lo Hoffman, and one of the researchers from Stellenbosch University.
Good morning, Sarah Tip, University of Stellenbosch.
Dr. Harris Steinman, I'm Director of Food and Allergy Consulting and Testing Services. I'm a co-author of the paper in question.
Who else from the side? Minya, your name, organization quickly, and the lady.
I work in the UWC.
Good morning, I'm Professor Peter Gauss. I'm Head of Biotechnology at the University of the Western Cape.
Morning, Siobhan Raji, University of the Western Cape.
Mohale Foster, Media Section in Parliament.
No, come on, Media Section, come. And that's like in the researcher for the portfolio committee.
Good morning, Zubair Rahim, Research Unit Parliament.
Quadram Jala, The Times newspaper.
Jolene Sabait, Lampo Via Plat.
Hi, Alexia from eNews, ENCA.
Kamala Homer, Eyewitness News.
Now, all of you, the bank dealers, two in one round. One person representing all of you quickly.
That will be a bit hard. Good morning, my name is Marga Herling. I'm from the Portfolio Committee of Trade and Industry, the Conscious Advisor.
Good morning, my name is Lindogu Changomani, Portfolio Committee on Health.
Yeah, and you are Bill Newspaper.
Michael Bofu, and I'm a researcher.
Kristen Selly, Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Tonight, good so far, folks.
Clinton, Ian Say.
Candice Johnson from the Cape August.
That's what I hear all the time when ANC announces itself. I always read ANC. Members, the department officials, the professors and doctors, media, public, we're having a session. The background to this, even before the report was published by Stellenbosch and PwC, the matter has always been on our table. We have heard, you know, reports about Orion as it would be bringing it and labeling and speculating in our retail stores. And I think it was about October last year. Of course, it even dates back 2011. To understand, you know, vigilance among, you know, our intellectuals and our fundis is always appreciated, that we have such reports being published. At best here, what brings us together is food security and food safety. So that's what brings us together as members of parliament in this committee. To understand, we even do not even recognize that we all belong to parties, such that you're not even getting to know as to who belongs to which party, precisely because we are bound together by those two fundamentals and objectives. Brings us together is food safety and food security. Our committee's work, therefore, naturally straddles between a number of departments. In terms of Meat Safety Act, you also shall have, you know, your health, you know, department. If you remember those olden days, you know, health inspectors would, you know, abruptly go to any of these retail stores and, you know, inspect whether anything is fine, everything is fine. And then, of course, the labeling here, in this instance, you have your trade industry. When the department brings or allows any food to come through, that inspection takes place at that point. Upon it having to arrive or reach any destination point, then your trading industry has to label. Now, as to whether how these three departments collaborate is what brings us together here. With our interest as we do our oversight work, it must be about collaboration. We must be able to find a reason why everybody must come together and be able to say at the end of the day, our food is secured and it is safe. Now, we have since then been given a wake-up call once again, with the results that have been announced out of the research work that was done. To an extent, it would have then been prudent that we allow our fundis to present. Now, what the committee secretary tells us is that they did not present or rather prepare anything, as it were. So, ideally, it would have been a situation where we have the professors and the doctors, you know, to come before us and be able to tell us exactly what did they find out before the departments can come in that do all the regulations and whatnot and whatnot. I think that would be an ideal situation. If you don't mind, we can then allow the professors and the doctors, after starting with the UWC and also concluding with the Stellenbosch, and then we shall allow the departments. If we can just talk also when departments are going to come through, yes, they might have this, you know, long slides and presentations and whatnot. Talk through the document. Do not take us through the entirety of the document. So that we shall allow for us to get the highlights. At best, we shall then give each department 10 minutes at the most. able to summarize the highlights of what is to be expected from each department. Okay? Can we then, who is assisting us with the technology? Who would you? Sorry? You have a presentation. That's why I'm asking for technical people. Stellenbosch, will you also be ready, alike? He's from the head. He loves you. Can we also have the departments also lined up? If you can just, have you already prepared that machine with your presentations? Whilst that technology is up and running. Okay, let's allow. Yep, it's. If you have a copy, you can sit there. Sit there.
One. My name is Eugenia D'Amato, and I'm an associate professor at the University of the Western Cape. I'm going to give a presentation on the research that we did in the lab and a brief introduction to who we are and what research we are doing in the forensic DNA lab. I don't know if I can pass the slides here. Okay. We are located in the UWC in the New Life Sciences building. And the biotechnology department is one of my departments.
Maybe at best you better sit that side so that you
just... Here.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, okay, you can... She here has the remote. You can... Just sit there, madam. You can sit down with your remote.
Now, as I was saying, we are located in the New Life Sciences building in the University of the Western Cape, and we are one of five departments operating in the building. The first photograph upright is showing the New Life Sciences building, and below the facilities of the forensic DNA lab with automatic sequencer and space for research and service. The forensic DNA lab operates mainly at the research level and also service. The main research we are doing is of human forensics related to human genetics related to forensics and application to forensics. We develop a Y chromosome DNA identification system for humans. I'm going to get back to that at the end of the talk. And we are developing DNA diagnostic methods, which are novel, applying nanotechnology methods. We're also doing research in food DNA and identification systems. One of our main activities is also the training of postgraduate students and service to the South African Police Service doing identification of highly decomposed human remains. So these we count on with separate facilities for research and service, separate facility for pre-PCR to avoid contamination from both research and services, a separate lab in a different floor to avoid contamination that we utilize to extract DNA from highly decomposed human remains. We have the ISO 17025 international accreditation processing process. Also, we can restart state-of-the-art laboratory equipment for forensic DNA analysis. The main research project I'm going to talk about here is the work that you all know about, This is a paper that was published in Investigative Genetics 3 weeks ago, and it's a journal of open access, and everyone can access the results of the research. And the experimental design that we followed was that of collecting samples in main supermarkets, outlets, small shops, specialized built on shops. We proceeded with the DNA extraction. Most of these samples were collected in between the year 2009 and 2011. And after that, we proceeded with obtention of DNA sequence information from two genes. And we investigated the identity of this sequence utilizing a matching procedure in public databases. After that, we followed statistical analysis to evaluate the reliability of those matches. The reliability of those matches was investigated following the main public databases. In this slide, I'm showing one of the matches that we found at Kangaroo. It's just for illustrative purposes. I can go on to this next one. After following a match, we cannot have a certain conclusion that that is a the species that we think it is just for a single match, because sometimes in databases the information is incomplete. So what we proceeded to do is obtain all published genetic information for those two genes for all the species that we suspected they were there for the initial search in the database. What I'm showing in this slide on the upper corner is a DNA sequence alignment where each color is representing one DNA base. Following that, we analyzed the identity of those sequences by reconstructing phylogenetic trees that shows clusters of high identity, and we utilize another computational method that extracts the information of identity per group following identifying the main diagnostic characters per group of animals that we identified. I'm going to show just two cases, those of horses, zebras and donkeys, and kangaroos. I have nearly 16, in between 16 and 20 phylogenetic trees, but the font is too small anyway. In the first case, on the left-hand side, you can see that some names are in black font and some of them in red font. Those are indicating sequences found in our sampling that represent another species of labeling. For instance, the blue blob on the left top corner is showing the blob for the Burkle zebra, and among those, I found two good species. And in the green blob below, the bottom sequence indicates zebra and is clustering with a group of sequences that is the Cape Mountain zebra, is an endangered species. On the right-hand side have the tree for kangaroos, and the red names are indicating that the sequences found in our samples that match kangaroos are ostrich and kudu. To summarize the results, the pie chart is showing the proportion of type of samples that we collected in the market. And in the right-hand side, I'm showing the percentage of substitution that was found in each sample type. For instance, among all biltong samples, 69% and did not indicate what the label was in the post was showing. And in dry sausages, in drawables, the proportion was much higher, where 86% of the samples were showing species that were not indicated in the label. And this is a more detailed summary of the substitutions per species. It's very detailed. It's showing that a high proportion of samples were substituted with beef, and also a high proportion of samples were simply a mislabeling of one game species or another. I have a summary of these results in the next slide, where I indicate that, and this pie chart is showing the substitution for all samples labeled as game. I want to say also that I sampled a few samples labeled beef, and all of them were correct. But and this pie chart is only showing the result for game. Nearly 43% of the samples labeled as some game species were showing that it was beef, actually. And a similar proportion was showing another game species. Also, I found a minor proportion of horse and pork. Horse was substituting a springbok and piece of biltong, and pork was found in an ostrich sausage. I also find a smaller proportion of kangaroo and sheep in the samples. I find of major concern that among the other game and nuclear species, as I indicated before in the previous slide, there's an endangered species, the Cape Mountain zebra. And all those species listed were not indicated in the label of the samples. The major challenge that we found in this research project was the scarce information for some species in the databases. By the moment we started the project in 2010, there was very little information about zebras in the databases. And we had to generate that reference information to see how similar they are by requesting samples to SANParks and the Quahog project in the UCT. Also, we received other reference samples from the National Zoological Gardens in Pretoria for other species for which we didn't have information in the databases. I can say that one major challenge for the African continent is that the number of wild species that can be delivered into the market is very high. The genetic diversity and the species diversity here is very high. And not all of them are represented in public genetic databases. Just a brief summary of the other research that we're doing in the lab. A couple of years ago, we published a paper on the utilization of the genetic variation of Y chromosome that we investigated in the lab. And the project is being developed at a different level now. We are developing a commercial prototype for Y chromosome DNA, an application to sexual assault and forensic and rape forensic cases. And this kit was called by the media the rape case. We're also developing different methods for detection of specific DNA in samples for human identification and another type of DNA identification as well, and we're developing fast DNA detection system not based on nanotechnology. I must acknowledge that the samples provided by SANParks, the Quahog project, and the National Zoological Gardens were crucial for the identification of some of the species in this work, and the research that we did in the identification of these species in the market was funded by the National Research Foundation and the University of the Western Cape.
Thank you for that. The presentation obviously will have to be taken out for production.
Okay.
We shall take both presentations, members, and then take the questions thereafter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I mentioned, my name is Lo Hoffman, and I'm a meat scientist. I occupy the SARCHI chair, that's the Department of Science and Technologies Research Chair in Meat Science at Stellenbosch University. Now, I think I must first categorically state that I am biased. As a meat scientist, if it bleeds, I will eat it. So anything that grows, I'm willing to eat it. But, and I think that's the crux of the matter. I want to know what I'm eating. Now, this study that we took, I think maybe the aim of our study was to see how compliant the industry was to the new labeling regulations. And we wanted to look at the industry as a whole. We weren't interested in specific shops. It was never our intention to go out there and name and shame. We wanted to see what was happening in the industry, were we compliant or not. And then the other thing we wanted, as any academic, we wanted to stimulate public debate around this scenario. And I think the fact that we're here today is an indication that we have done that. We've created a public awareness around it. I think, first of all, also to say, during the sampling, there was no third party that financed any of this research. It was financed within the University of Stellenbosch. So there was no group who came to us. We do a lot of work for groups who come and ask us to test their products to see what is in there. So that's one of the first ones. The other, we went to the main provinces where we know there will be a large number of people, so a lot of meat consumed. And we also decided to look at the wide spectrum from the major supermarkets down to small butcheries. So we didn't just focus on one group. What you must also bear in mind, that the period, this was done between April and August 2012. And if I'm not mistaken, the new labeling regulations had come into being but hadn't been that long into the sort of new regulations that are being applied. So we did expect to find a number of people that weren't compliant with the new regulations. And so the products we looked at specifically were also those that we thought from our historical knowledge of the industry that could maybe be contaminated. So we didn't look at whole meat, because any consumer could look at a steak and know it comes from a beef, or a chop and know it comes from a lamb, or chicken and it comes from chicken. So end of the day, looking at our findings, the products, so typically what you would look at would be sausages or mince, because in the meat industry, that's the dustbin of the industry. If you processing, if you have a butchery and you're cutting up, let's say, a goat to sell, all the trimmings you're going to put in one container, and then the next animal you might do is a lamb or a beef, and all your trimmings are going to go into one container. And at the end of the day, that container, you are going to mince it and make a sausage or whatever. So that's a typical scenario that happens in real life out there. So there is that possibility, and we wanted to test to see how it went. What our findings were was basically that 95 of the 139 products we sampled contained undeclared species. And I think that's the emphasis. It wasn't necessarily unsafe. It was just not declared. And according to us, the consumer should have the right to know what was in that species. And that was one of the first things we wanted to have a look at. And I think I want to emphasize here, only one sample had donkey in it. Now, I haven't eaten donkey. I've eaten a lot of horse. And in fact, horse is more healthy than a lot of the normal meat we eat, such as beef and lamb, because of the fatty acid profile. So maybe I'll get the opportunity to eat donkey, so I could say I've eaten it. The fact, though, is all the products that we found, with the exception of the donkey, we expected, because it's normally added in meat products, but we would have hoped that it would have been shown as such on the label, which hadn't happened there at all. Two other things I want to emphasize here that we found. One was pork, and the other was chicken. that hadn't been labored. Now, pork, typically if you make a sausage or a hamburger patty and you need to add fat, you will most probably a lot of time add pork fat. So that's why we'd expected it, but we would have liked to have seen it for obvious reasons. I mean, it's religion, various health reasons as well. The same with the chicken. Within the country, legally, we bring in a lot of mechanically recovered or mechanically deboned chicken that comes into the products. This is a meat protein, but it has no texture. So it's ideal to add to any sausage, any patty, any polony, any Vienna. And it's a way the industry uses to produce a cheaper meat protein source. So we'd expected it. Again, we would have hoped it would have been labeled. The water buffalo we found, that was interesting to find it as a scientist. It worried us because it wasn't labeled. But at that stage, water buffalo, according to our regulations, was classified as bovine, as being beef. So they weren't wrong in calling it beef. Since then, obviously, the regulation has been changed that water buffalo is now classified as water buffalo. So it wasn't wrong scientifically, it was incorrect, but I think from a legal viewpoint, it wasn't wrong at that stage. I think if I look at the end of the day, the implications, what we found, was the meat, the different species we found, was it a health risk? I would venture to say no, because all the products that came in that were imported go through strict health regulations before they're allowed into the country. So I'm comfortable that it was safe to eat. I think what worried me more there was the fact that I would have liked to have known what I was eating. The donkey per se, that had a couple of red lights flashing, because although there are abattoirs that are classified and allowed to slaughter horse, I don't know of any that slaughter donkey. So my question was, this was a small butchery in KwaZulu-Natal. It looked very neat from when you went inside there. It was one of those butcheries where you could see the butcher actually cutting up the carcasses. So we were quite surprised. And the question we raised is, did this donkey go through the formal meat system, which we have very good systems, by the way, monitored by the Department of Agriculture in the country. So the question was, did this go through the formal? I don't think so. So it might then have come in through the informal system, through the back door, as it were. And then it raises questions, well, why was the donkey slaughtered? Was it a sick donkey or not? But these are just speculations from our side. Then the other one that worries me were the allergens that weren't listed. This is particularly, my colleague behind me could correct me as he's an allergen expert, but if I'm not mistaken, about 20% of consumers could have allergic reactions to the plant allergens that we have found. And in the labeling regulations, it clearly states allergens have to be mentioned and noted. So that worried us. From that side, I think maybe I want to also emphasize something. This study was done in April and August 2012, and it should be seen as a snapshot and a historical snapshot at that. And that brings me to the next point. What has happened since then? Since then, it's been published widely. So we were quite successful in meeting that aim. We had two aims. One was to show whether South Africa was compliant or not, and I think we clearly indicated they weren't. Two, we wanted to stimulate public debate, and I think we were successful in that as well. So what's the result of this has been a number of things. One, Department of Health came to our laboratories and asked us to help them test samples. And that was where the first problem came in, because Department of Health, they're the responsible body, but they don't have a budget for that. So as a university and part of our social responsibility, we went into an agreement with the Department of Health that we would do it at cost price and we would prioritize the study, because we also as a university and as researchers have a social responsibility. And I think that's one of the first queries, because as my colleagues from University of Western Cape will tell you, DNA analysis is not cheap. And I think that's one of the questions we need to ask is, we have enough legislation, but do we give the necessary funds to the people who have to enforce it? That's the first question that comes up in my mind. Then what's also happened was the big retailers, they got their house in order. They're sending in samples through all the different labs in the country to do species identification, because the big retailers cannot afford to have an image that they are selling meat that has kangaroo or donkey. So they're doing a self-regulatory system, which is nice, which is good. And in our discussion with the Department of Health, we also pointed out to them that they shouldn't waste their resources on the big retailers, because the big retailers will police themselves, because they cannot afford to have a customer leave their shop to go shop at the competition. But the one that I'm worried about is the poor consumer, because I think that is where the big problem is. And Department of Health, I know they sent the samples and they got the results back. They will most probably report to the committee later today on what those results were. And I think that's where the focus is. Who's going to look after the poor consumer? Because he has just as much right as a upper, higher income consumer to know what he's consuming. And that's the one I'm worried about. I think, Mr. Chairman, that is enough said. Otherwise, I'm going to go into lecture mode. Thank you.
Again, you might have to be doing what you do best. Members, my view is that we allow all the presentations to come through. Otherwise, we might just have to take, to an extent, you know, even reach out to some of the department issues. I'm aware that the DTI has or cabinet has taken this issue up quite seriously. To an extent, there is a process in motion. To an extent, that the Department of Trade and Industry might just have to take us through that its own presentation, as it is leading this process with the consumer protection and those related matters. And thereafter, we shall be followed by Health Department, and lastly by the Agriculture Department, in that order. Thanks. As we indicated earlier on, we only allowed, you know, our learned professors and doctors to take their own time, precisely because of the work that they've done. The intention there was for them to say, bring us what you have done in the shortest possible time. So they have done so. So if you don't mind speaking to the document without really taking us through the entire document. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and fellow South Africans. As the Chair has indicated, we'll just try and highlight some of the issues, starting firstly with the role of the DTI in this particular area. We will also discuss the very relevant sections where we discuss labeling in general and trade descriptions. The powers of the ministers, as he has recently evoked them in the face of the recent publications on incorrect labeling. The powers of the NCC, which is the National Consumer Commission, which is tasked with it and given powers to investigate such matters, and what some of the challenges are around this area. Our role is informed by the Consumer Protection Act. Basically, in terms of this act, we, amongst other things, require that a consumer be truly informed in order for the consumer to be able to make the right choices. In respect of the meat labeling issue, that's where we come in. Our primary role is not necessarily the safety, as the professor has spoken about. It is actually about making the consumer to be aware, for the consumer to be able to make the right choices. So correct labeling is very paramount in that regard. And the sections of the Consumer Protection Act that actually speak to correct labeling is Section 24. And the trade description is actually defined in Section 1 of the Consumer Protection Act. If you look at the slide, we have highlighted the ingredients, which is, I think, the most relevant aspect of what we are discussing here today, as to that we require that, amongst other things, in a trade description, which is required of a particular product, that the disclosure, of course, we've got the other issues, the number, the quantity, and so on. But I think what's more relevant in this particular instance is what exactly are the ingredients that are contained in a particular product. We have previously required labeling of things such as the country of origin and so on. The most important section, as I've indicated, is Section 22, which actually prohibits, or labels as prohibited conduct, any person could become a producer, a supplier, or an importer for that matter, of any particular goods, from misleading consumers, because we don't want consumers to be misled in respect of any labeling in a particular product or packaging of that particular product. We also, in terms of that Act, Section 24.3, indicate that any trade description, we prohibit any retailer in particular from doing something that could potentially mislead consumers as to the trade description of a particular product, or in instances where you'd find that the packaging or the labeling has actually been altered or covered or defaced so as to mislead the consumer. Again, Honorable Chair, the emphasis is to give the consumer the correct information so that the consumer can make the best choices. We are not pronouncing, perhaps it's important to also emphasize this, on the safety or not of particular products, on the availability or not, or the procurement of such products, whether in fact donkey meat should actually be made available or not. What we are saying is that if it is available, then it should be correctly labeled so that the consumer can actually make the correct choice. Of course, sister departments would be best suited to pronounce on whether in fact that particular product should be made available in the market. Now, the minister, in response to, in terms of the act, and in response to the meat labeling scandals, has fortunately powers to deal with that. And one of those powers is to prescribe the categories of goods. In this case, that would be meat in general. That should have a trade description. And the rules and then the actual information that should be contained. I think in later slides, we'll actually see what the notice that has been issued by the minister responding very swiftly to the scandal requires, or what kind of information is required to be displayed on the trade description. That government notice is 36285. It was issued a week or so after the news broke out. And what the minister is required in terms of the statutory powers under the Consumer Protection Act is the labeling of all processed and packaged meat products and dried packaged meat products. And the information that the minister deemed fit to be required in this respect is the weight, the gauge of the goods, the name of the producer, but I think again, most importantly, the ingredients of which the goods consist of or are made. And also, there's also the issue of the mode of manufacturing or producing the goods. That is, ladies and gentlemen, the kind of information that in future we would like to see, and particularly on meat products. One of the other powers that the minister has and which he has evoked in response to the scandal is requiring the National Consumer Commission, in terms of Section 86 of the Act, to investigate. the minister has issued a directive to the NCC to investigate this scandal and to report back to him with time frames as to when this investigation can be completed. The NCC, ladies and gentlemen, just to go briefly through it, has got all the necessary powers to given to its inspectors to investigate. They've got search and seizure. We expect them to be visiting some of the, you know, butchers or institutions who might be implicated in this particular matter. Maybe they might even have to now approach the universities for assistance, like the professor was talking about laboratories and stuff. But they have the powers, and from time to time they can also procure the services of experts to determine certain matters or to assist them with certain issues. One of the things that we have included here is that education is important. It's critically important in that people need to be aware. Without perhaps the universities and the testing, we would not have known of this issue. But if people are aware of their rights and they are able to complain or to lay allegations of contraventions of the Consumer Protection Act, then in that way certain matters can be investigated. But we need to enhance this capacity to educate consumers on what they can do and which institutions they can approach if they wanted to lay complaint. Non-compliance is punishable by up to 1 million rand or 10% of an offending firm's total annual turnover in the preceding year, whichever is the greater. So compliance by companies is quite important. That's where we enter the fray as the DTI, correct labeling for of any product that in accordance with the law, and if there's incorrect labeling, we encourage consumers to lay complaints so that institutions and the minister may perhaps institutions such as the National Consumer Commission and the Minister may institute investigations, and after prosecutions, such firms are may be liable to fines. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Help?
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, ladies and gentlemen. What we'll be quickly doing is just to define what the role of food control is, as managed by the Department of Health, highlight a few of the pieces of legislation that are enabling and some of the challenges we've seen. We will report very, very quickly on the sampling that we did that the professor alluded to and what future challenges are. I'm going to skip through some of the slides.
Do you have any presentation from Health?
Yes. The definition of food safety, which is our mandate, is defined by the World Health Organization as assurance that food will not cause harm to the consumer when it is prepared or eaten according to its intended use. And we define a food contaminant as any biological or chemical or foreign matter or other substance not intentionally added to food, which may compromise food safety or suitability. And those are the principles we abide by in doing our work. Now, the role of the specific sectors, the National Department of Health comes up with policy legislation, guidance documents, including norms and standards. But we don't extend to abattoirs and import and export of fresh meat because that's the mandate of the Department of Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry. The provincial departments of health are responsible for food import control, of course, excluding unprocessed meat, and coordination of activities of local authorities. And the local authorities are responsible for enforcement in their areas of jurisdiction, anything that is in the Foodstuffs, Cosmetics and Disinfectants Act. And the guiding act, the main act we guided by is the Foodstuffs, Cosmetics and Disinfectants Act, the National Health Act, and the Municipal Structures Act. Now, coming quickly to what the Foodstuffs and Cosmetics and Disinfectants Act, and we'll confine ourselves to foodstuffs in this regard. It provides for description of all foodstuffs in terms of the origin, the nature, the substance, the composition, the quality, the strength, nutritive value, time, mode, and place of manufacture. And then it authorizes our minister by notice in the Gazette to authorize any local authority by notice in the Gazette to enforce within its area of jurisdiction and through its duly authorized officers such provisions of this act as the minister may specify in the notice. And in summary, that is the enforcement side. The regulations of labeling that we are talking about today were published in March of 2010. And in interaction with the industry, it was decided, they said they needed about 2 years to be able to implement the labeling requirements. And therefore, this set of the regulations came into effect in March of 2012. Hence, the professor from Stellenbosch started their study around about April and or July or thereabout of that year. These regulations provide for compulsory quantitative ingredient declaration for raw processed meat and processed meat, and that is in Regulation 26.2. It also provides for disclosure of common allergens and risk of allergen cross-contamination, which is mandatory, and uncommon allergens on request by a consumer or an inspector of the DOH. It is mandatory if it is asked for by the inspector. It is by negotiation if a consumer asks for, and probably we need to talk around this one with the respective department that has more muscle than we have in this regard. For public health, the allergens are more serious because that is a health risk. And for the cross-contamination, some companies, the bigger companies, do comply. I'm sure we have seen in some of the food packages where they say produced in a factory that has nuts. That's part of the information that alerts the consumer that is probably allergic to nuts that there might be a problem with that particular product for that specific person. Quickly going to regulations governing the composition and labeling of raw bratwurst, raw species sausage, and raw meat species sausage. They must specify the maximum meat content, fat content. No offer is used except for casing in sausages. No mechanically recovered meat, that is bones and stuff that might be minced and put into sausages and so on. Maximum calcium content, other ingredients, and other specific labeling requirements. For instance, there's a limit to colorants, there's a limit to certain additives that are problematic and so on. Then the National Health Act is the one that lists and defines the functions of municipal health services. What I need to mention here very quickly is that food control is one of the functions that are listed there that municipal health that comprise what municipal service delivery, health service delivery would be. It's quite a number of functions. Now, the environmental health practitioners whose function ensures consumer protection. These are the people that are responsible for enforcement at municipal level. They're responsible for food inspection at the point of production, storage, distribution, and consumption. That is across the whole value chain. Regulation of food premises, control of food premises, and ensuring that food is safe and healthy for human consumption by enforcement of the relevant legislation. We have regulations that were published in 2007 that stipulate inspection powers, that an inspector may demand a document, information, examine foodstuff, take a sample. They can detain food. They can lock up premises if things are serious. They can seize food. They can rectify any condition they find that is in violation of the law. And one of the methods has already been alluded to is taking samples randomly and sending them to laboratories, as has happened with the two laboratories that reported earlier. The laboratory we generally use is for microbiological analysis, which is the NHLS, which is part of the government laboratory services. And the National Forensic Chemical Laboratory is responsible for chemical analysis. And as well as they are expected to inspect foodstuffs to check on the new labeling regulations. we were asked to look at coordination and collaboration amongst the departments, with a fairly good relationship between the NDOH and the Department of Agriculture, Forestries and Fisheries. We do have standing meetings on certain issues, and this time we've had a number of collaborative meetings, and actually they gave us a record of who the importers of horse meat are and which butcheries actually have a license to slaughter horse meat. And we did a sample in Gauteng and involved the Gauteng metros and municipalities. And at the time we had sent the samples for testing, but now we have results of that, which we only received yesterday, so they are not part of the of this presentation, but I'll quickly report on it. We found that of the samples we took, there were 20 samples that we sent to the laboratory. 15% of them were correctly labeled as beef sausage, and it was just beef. We had ham, which conventionally contains pork and beef and chicken, and we found that. We found there was horse meat in 10% of the samples. There was kangaroo meat in 5%, and in fact, this kangaroo meat was in one of the samples that contained horse meat as well. And in terms of sausages, we had beef, chicken, and pork, but surprisingly, we had some turkey as well, and we assumed it was the timing because it's just after Christmas. There might be spare turkey left, but that's just an assumption. Work is underway with the National Consumer Council in responding to the mandate that was given to them. And we developed a questionnaire that we sent to municipalities to check their capacity to sample and test samples. Chair and honorable members, I must say that these DNA tests are fairly expensive. For the 20 samples at cost, we had to pay about 30,000 rand. And that is not cheap. However, we have gone through to the municipalities, and the due day was the 24th. We have not received responses from all of them. Free State gave us responses, 100% response. Northern Cape, 40%. Gauteng, 83%. Mpumalanga, 66% of them responded. Western Cape, 50% responded. Eastern Cape, 29% responded. And we didn't get a response from KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, and Northwest so far, but we will keep on encouraging them to report. Some of the challenges that we are identifying, some of them we've always known, is that not all provinces have finished their devolutions of the municipal health services. We also find that we can't really monitor because their budget, municipal health services budget, is not clearly identified as a line item in the budgeting lines. And therefore, it makes it very easy, difficult for us to monitor how much is goes to what and what the prioritization is. And the whole function of food control is fragmented with a multiplicity of players resulting in overlaps and possibly gaps. And therefore, we believe coordination and efficient use of resources becomes challenging in this myriad of players. And we've got a number of policy or possible solutions. Maybe we need memoranda of agreement amongst some of the role players. We need to analyze and streamline roles and functions. Alignment particularly of resources. And resources, we don't mean just money. We mean expertise. We mean the numbers of personnel. What laboratory support is there? Does it cover everybody from a small municipality to a large metro? And very importantly, we need to strengthen tracing and enforcement capacity. And in fact, these tests that we did with the University of Stellenbosch that we received results thereof yesterday was an effort on our part to see whether we can strengthen a tracking system that we would be informed by the Department of Agriculture who has sold what way. And then we can strengthen the tracking system, working together and see where the risk lies. But most importantly, we believe we need to follow a risk-based approach. Tests are quite expensive. And therefore, we need to prioritize our test activities to those areas that are highest risk. And for us in health, the highest risk is allergens, for instance. The highest risk will be in additives that may be carcinogenic and those kinds of issues that relate specifically to food safety. and possibly we could explore a food agency. But Chair, before I end, I would like to mention that this DNA testing does pose a few challenges for us. First, DNA testing will tell us that there's a trace of a particular species. It will not give us a quantitative a sense of what is what. Is it 60% adulteration, which is very serious? Is it 20% adulteration? Is it a good manufacturing practice lapse where somebody has not cleaned up equipment properly? Is it cross-contamination? So it doesn't give us those answers. And therefore, from an enforcement and a policing side, it becomes a little bit difficult. We did have a discussion with some of the professors, and I'm not sure we have that technology, but I think it's something we have to investigate. Of course, taking into account would be the cost of doing those things, and which things would we be doing, and would the cost result in benefit or in health risk or priority information to the consumers. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Duff? Your 10 minutes.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, colleagues. I'm very happy that some of the issues that we've been concerned about have been touched on, but I want to emphasize looking at the species that have been mentioned by all the previous presenters that there is none of them that is inedible in terms of our legislation. And maybe the most controversial one is a donkey. But if we look at our Meat Safety Act, it is one of the animals that has been identified as an animal that can be slaughtered for consumption. The controversial issue, of course, is the fact that amongst the registered avatars, we know that there is certainly three avatars that are registered for slaughterhouse horses. We don't have specific avatars that are registered for slaughter of donkeys that we know of, but since those that are registered for slaughter horses can also, donkeys are also classified as equidae, it is possible that they may be slaughtered in those facilities. But the most important issue that we should be concerned about is the safety of the products that are being included in the sausages and then also in the mince. We have agreed with the Department of Health and the Department of Trade and Industry that in this particular issue that was raised by the two universities is actually an issue of mislabeling, and we all agree that it should be handled as such, and it is true that the general public needs to be informed about what they are consuming and what they are purchasing. Going back to the presentation, the purpose of our presentation is basically to try and address those issues that the Honorable Chair has indicated we should address in terms of showing where we collaborate with other departments and what are the roles and responsibilities of our different departments. From the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries side, we have the Meat Safety Act that we normally talk about in terms of inspection of abattoirs, as explained by our colleague from the Department of Health. But we also have the Agricultural Product Standard Act, which has got many regulations related to, in particular, the classification of meat and the quality of meat itself. We also deal with importation of food of animal origin, meats, and including casings. And then we'll touch on the issue of the horse meat scandal or donkey meat scandal, and then challenges related to the studies done by the University of Stellenbosch and then also the University of the Western Cape, some of which have already been addressed by my colleague from the Department of Health. I think what the universities have done up to so far, they haven't indicated to the honorable members that this test is a very sensitive test. It picks up traces. And then Ms. Heller tried to explain that although all the departments do not condone it, it is possible that the cleaning process in the abattoirs, in the butcheries, and within the mincing machines is not been done up to the SOPs, up to the standard operating procedures, to an extent that there could be some traces of the other meats that are remaining in the machines that will obviously be seen as contamination. Not necessarily adulteration, because that is the most important thing that we have to emphasize. But I also want to indicate that we do have also the Animal Diseases Act that regulates on-farm disease control and health of the animals to avoid that sick animals should be slaughtered. We've touched on the Meat Safety Act and then also the Department of Health on the Health Act. I would like to mention at this point, Chairperson, that the animal feed and livestock remedies are part of on-farm health regulation by the Department of Health, also by the Department of Agriculture, mainly by the Department of Agriculture, from the Animal Feeds and Stock Remedies Act, Act 36 of 1957. But also from a point of view of animal medicines, the Medicines Act 101 plays a very important role in terms of on-farm health of the animals, in terms of veterinary and pharmaceuticals that are related to that. And Michelle spoke to the Foodstuff Cosmetics and Disinfectant Act, and we also want to indicate that the Department of Health is also helping to a certain extent in terms of compliance in this particular issue, in this particular regulation. The other act that haven't been spoken to is the Trade Metrology Act within the DTI, and then also under the South African Bureau of Standards, which is appointed by the Minister of Trade and Industry to ensure safety of the food chain, particularly the canned meat products and certain fishery products. I would like to talk to the Meat Safety Act, and it was indicated that the Health Act doesn't go as far as the abattoirs. The Department of Agriculture works hand in hand with the owners of the abattoir, and it is expected that a meat inspection service should be conducted. And then people who are conducting meat inspection should be registered with the department. And then we conduct anti-mortem inspections, and then it is very important that we also indicate what are the objectives of the anti-mortem inspection: to screen all animals that are destined for slaughter, to secure that the animals are properly rested and that clinical information is obtained, to reduce contamination of the killing floor, to ensure that injured animals and those in pain or those that are suffering receive emergency slaughter, to identify reportable animal diseases, to identify sick animals, and to require and ensure that the cleaning and disinfection of trucks is of the highest standard. We've already talked a lot about the carcasses, and we there are specific marks that are given to carcasses, beef, pork, and then also the people treat as specifications to a particular issue, or stems that are used to mark these carcasses must be made from edible ink. The ink shouldn't be harmful to health. They must contain, the stems must contain the abattoir register. The stems must be at least in two official languages, of which English is necessary. And then minimum sizes are also specified as to what is the size of the stems. And then veterinarians conduct a secondary meat inspection, as you all know. And then the Agricultural Product Standards Act also adds to the consumer confidence. And then we all know that in terms of the quality, we do have a partner that we are working with in terms of SAMIC. And then we do have a specific criteria that we use for classification of carcasses. And then I've already mentioned that red meat is also defined. We've got goat, sheep, and then we have other species. Then we have poultry, and we do have fowls, Muscovy ducks, and so on. I'm trying to go very fast through my presentation. Maybe we should go to the next slide. In terms of the Agricultural Product Standards Act, we should also identify the country of origin, and then also be in a position to identify the grade, and then we should be in compliance with the Foodstuff Cosmetics and Disinfectant Act in terms of labeling. And that is again to try to illustrate our collaboration. The most important part that has already been talked to is the issue of importation of animals. And I must indicate that the water buffalo that is apparently found in the sausages and the reservoirs and the means has been legally imported, and it has been found to be safe. In terms of its safety, there was nothing wrong with the meat, and I think the professor indicated that it was classified as beef before recently, although it was imported as water buffalo meat. It was classified as beef. But in any case, I want to emphasize that it was found to be safe, and the only challenge, as we indicated, it was necessary that the sausages be labeled correctly. We from the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, before we import any product for use in South Africa, we evaluate equivalence status in terms of sanitary laws, including health, and then regulations that are in place in that country, and then we request that there should be government oversight in the country of origin, and then also make sure that the products that are imported are in compliance with the South African legislation. That is why at the point of entry, there is quite a lot of involvement of other departments. And then once the products are registered and found to be safe for South Africa's conditions, then they are released into the country where they are handled by subsequently by the other departments. I will briefly talk to the horse meat issue. South Africa is a global player in the international trade, as we all know, and indicated that we are very strict in terms of importation. And then we had actually, from a country perspective, imported around, in 2012, around 150 tons of horse meat from Brazil, and it was accompanied by a valid import permit. And then we have already talked about the three abattoirs that are registered. I want to emphasize, and I'm not sure, Prof, about the Cape Mountain zebra, but we do slaughter zebra in this country. We slaughter
not a Libra, particularly for export market. It's a delicacy in Europe. And we do have a couple of amateurs that slaughter this Libra for the export market. And it is not illegal to do that, except if it is an endangered species, of course. I think Ms. Ella did speak to the issues of concern from the study. The unconventional species, the donkey, is actually the greatest one, but the others, in terms of safety, are not such a big worry. Of course, except the labeling to indicate to the public what we are eating.
You have 1 minute.
Yes, Chair, I'm finishing. The department is of a view that, with the exception of a few species, the study, I indicated that all these species are normally slaughtered, maybe except for the donkey, and I will keep on going to that. In terms of the solutions that have been proposed by the DCI and then also by the Department of Health, we also want to indicate what are we doing as a department. We've got formalized mechanisms for coordination of actions by all role players, including the RMIF and the other industry players. We believe that it is okay, it is the right thing to enhance compliance where function has been delegated through an audit system. In the case where the Department of Health has indicated that may have delegated some functions to the local municipalities, maybe we need to coordinate the auditing, even from the point of view of DAF, and if meat inspection has been delegated to an assignee, we will also do extensive audits. We need to improve collaboration with all departments, agencies, on import control measures by enforcing traceability, which is an issue that maybe is lacking in terms of the systems right now to be able to trace where the products are actually coming from that are incorporated into the meats and the sausages. And then we will have to have a system of enhancing our communication mechanisms with all South Africans in the face of similar challenges. It is very important, Chairperson, to note that it is very important to allocate the necessary resources, because I think everybody, the professors, the Department of Health indicated that I believe that one DNA sample cost around 2,000 rands, if I'm not mistaken, or probably 1,800. But I hear that for 20 samples it cost around 30,000 rands. So it is important that we have the necessary resources for us to be able to coordinate the issues related to similar standards. Thank you, Chair.
Members, those are the submissions presented by the departments and also the investors mentioned. But what I would appreciate you do, perhaps for a change, as we engage, we almost direct ourselves solutions, and not so much having to be on problem, equally important, but most importantly, how do we see solutions in the equation? Obviously, this is the first second encounter. We are gradually getting to a point where we shall be correcting whatever is wrong. One of those
coming out that there is undesired stuff that is in the in their fridges and shelves. And then South Africa then has come up with the view. Was it because of what we heard from Europe that they started just to engage on the research prof? That's the first question. Second question is with regards to the kangaroo meat. I wonder, religious person, how come, because we don't have kangaroos in South Africa, they are only in Australia. How come that we have the remains of the particles of those beasts in our sausages or other sorts of spangers, as was pointed out? Was it because maybe of a demand? Direct, these questions are related to agriculture. Was it because of a demand from South Africa that they felt it necessary that they should import kangaroo to our abattoirs? Or do we have those stars as what I would call the stuff that were prepared and supplied to South Africa after having done proper processing from other countries and ended up in our shelves too. Chairperson, another concern is around what Dr. Mosan pointed out with regards to chicken meat. I understand we are importing a lot of chicken meat from other countries. And there is that understanding of chicken brining. Along the transportation of those stuffs to South Africa, if maybe any of the professors can maybe assist us in this committee with regards to how safe it is for those imports, the period on the ships being brought here, and still have to maintain that fresh start of it until it reaches the fridges and shelves of South African consumers. Thank you, Chairperson.
Mr. Bang. My chair, I think also I want to focus more on what the professors have been saying. I like the intentions. The professor says their intention was to inform the consumer and also trigger public debate. And I think I agree when they say they have done that. But what I don't like on what has been said by many presenters, in particular departmental officials, is the fact that, to me, I'm not confused with the fact that this thing is not only about, say, the debate is not only focusing on safe meat and healthy meat. I'm not confused about that. But I understand why the academics had to do this research, because there was an irregularity in between. And to me, sitting here, it sounds as if there is an element of justifying a certain element that, no man, don't worry, you see, water buffalo, that, you see, it doesn't make you sick. As a legislature here, as a person who legislates, acts here, if it is legislated that labeling should be correct, this should be done, beef should be beef, lamb should be lamb, meaning somebody have not been able to implement what he was supposed to implement. That's why the academics are saying we wanted a public discussion, because they wanted to bring this thing to our attention, that as a causer, eat certain things, he might be eating something that is not necessarily halal and spoiling his own religious food. Therefore, there's illegality there. That's what we're talking about here in South Africa. And I think we should understand that at this kind of making it look rosy to try and justify to us that, no, but don't worry. You can eat your buffalo. You can eat that. That's not the point. The point is that for the fact that we get to the level of having this meat that is not labeled properly, there's something wrong. Where is it? We must get there to that point. Because that's what we should identify. We were meant to be told that in the last meeting, that amongst the problems we have is inspection of this meat and safety act that we had, that has not been implemented for 13 years in as far as agriculture because of lack of financing of that act. We want to hear those things coming out again and again and again, because if we don't deal with that, we'll continue to have this problem. To me, academics, it does not end there. I'm from KwaZulu-Natal. I shop in Kosi, and I know they're in Belgium. To me, I'm not convinced that this ends there. I'm not convinced. As I walk in the Belgium station there and see the meat that lies there, can you convince me and tell me that with this loophole that we have found in your research, in which there are also elements that are saying even your research might not necessarily be conclusive in terms of giving proper information, and then saying what percentage of what does that mean? A mixed meat. I'll use, because I'm from KwaZulu-Natal High School, a mixed meat. That a small portion of that meat might be there. The officials are beginning to say that the whole process might not necessarily provide us conclusive evidence. So say we are convinced that it is true, a bigger portion of this meat being contaminated, mixed. But the point that I'm trying to make, can you tell us as South Africa that even that, we should only focus on this thing of labeling, that the meat that is circulating to our people, particularly the poor. There in Belgium, you can go there, you see the kind of meat. With a layman eye, can see that I cannot eat this meat. Costing, I see the meat and say, this meat, I cannot eat. To me, if we have loopholes only on labeling, even on the safety and health of that meat, we still have problems. But it's not coming out, but buffalo is nice, what a buffalo you can eat, horse meat, but I still believe that we should also go deeper. I want to propose because amongst the problems we are having here, it's an integrated approach. All these legislations have been there. Please, you cannot tell South Africa today that, okay, we are thinking of the way forward only. That's why that point what was made by one of the professors, accounting about the past. Because the legislations have always been there. DTI have had this legislation for 2 years. They are only shocked now. They are starting to do something about it. A week back, a gazette has been passed. The point is that there's no integration approach to make sure that we have. Do we even have the money to implement these legislations? We can live here happy that we are going to do something, but what we have learned is that if we leave you like that, don't give you time frames, we might not succeed. That at least check in a period of 3 months. There's not even a thinking amongst you, as people who are dealing with this, that you are saying you have a joint steering committee that is working on this in terms of responding to this. We need to see strategies going forward and saying this is what we are going to do to make the situation look better. We can't give you another 13 years like the Health and Safety Act. You can only give you a period of 3 months and say we need a report in relation to this. DNAs are expensive, but meat, this thing happened to be tested. We must find a way of how we're going to finance this research. How are they doing it in other countries? Are we going to fold our arms and say, because this is so expensive, this testing and so on, we're not going to do any other thing about it? We might continue to live with this problem because we're saying we do not have money to do some of the things. Therefore, we need to come up with a clear plan. To me, Chair, as of now, the plan is not clear, it's too vague. or is still academic, I'll put it more academic to me. But we need action. People are angry outside there about the situation. That's why in the last meeting, and I said, if we're in another country, we needed to arrest all other officials to make sure that we trust people that we put who look after our own health. But I'm not going to say it today, but in the last meeting I said that's what we needed to do. Thank you very much.
Mr. Ra?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I want to thank the presenters for the presentations. Chairperson, it is quite clear that judging from the inputs of particularly the departments, the three departments. A person once said that the law says that nobody has the right to lynch me. The law cannot absolutely prevent me from being lynched. Now that is the situation, Chair. You have the laws, you've got the Consumer Protection Act, which allows the consumer this right and that right and the other, but at the end of the day, who delivers that right to the consumer? You have the Department of Health that relies heavily on other agencies of government, local government, provincial government, to carry out many of its functions, but unfortunately, I'm sure that this House will agree that if you look at the state of local government in our country, it is unimplementable. So you've got all the good laws. You don't have to go and reinvent the wheel. The other problem, naturally, Chairperson, is that I get the impression, as I have also with respect to the Department of Agriculture's involvement in various issues, where other departments are also have a stake, that I get the impression that they don't talk to us. Department of Agriculture's function basically here is to promote the agricultural sector, to see that the country remains food secure, and it then comes to a point where another department has to see to it that the products that the farmers have produced are palatable, that they are safe for human consumption, and that they are marketed according to the norms and standards that the laws have laid down. And then you take the Department of Health, who has to see that those products are all fit for human consumption, that they are healthy. But the three departments are not talking to one another. If I look at all the presentations here, Chairperson, there is a golden thread running through it. And that is that as a result of what civil society, and that includes RMIF, who came along here and complained about the lack of the registration of abattoirs, about the lack of meat inspection or the inadequacy thereof. Then you had this big boo-ha 2 years ago about the meat that landed in South Africa labeled for in various ways, and it was found to be something else and not what they had labeled it as. It is these issues that have actually created, and of course the work of the scientists and researchers who have created this climate where there seems to be an urgency of trying to do something. So, Chairperson, I'm not going to go into the details of everything. I think that we should by now have a picture of what is really happening in the country. And in order to put it right, Chair, you have asked that we should look at possible solutions. We are a multicultural society. We have various cultural practices. We have various requirements of various cultural groups. We need to respect it. Bearing that in mind, Chair, I think it is time that these three departments, and there may be another department also that might be involved, or that should be involved, but that they get together and come up with plans as to how the implementation of these various laws is going to take place. Who takes responsibility over what? If the municipalities are dysfunctional and their health departments are therefore also dysfunctional, there must be a plan B, because the health of society is at stake. So there needs to be a plan. Otherwise, Chair, what we will have continuously, we will be told what the law provides, and that's what I have heard. The law provides this and the law provides that. But the law does not deliver it. And that's where the problem lies, Chair. That unless the law is implemented, you are not going to see the delivery. Now, Chairperson, I just want to caution one or two things. For example, in the presentation of DAF, they talk here about, it's slide 19, they talk here about the complex aspects of traditional and religious practices, issues, monitoring and certification, and providing such guarantees to an unsuspecting consumer remains a challenge. Now, Chairperson, I want to warn the department. You will stir a hornet's nest if you are going to tell those rural people where there's a funeral and they, or a female that has died, she says that they've got to find a female animal, and for a male animal, and you want to prescribe to them how that animal should be slaughtered, where it should be slaughtered and where not. I think the professor spoke about self-regulation. That is something which that family, they're not going to do something which is going to contaminate the meat and therefore make it unpalatable to the many mourners that have come for the funeral. Bear that in mind. When you take, for example, the community of which I am a member, a Muslim, where we slaughter every time when we celebrate the sacrifice that Prophet Abraham was prepared to make by offering up his son, where thousands of animals, and I would say millions throughout the world, are slaughtered. I oversee the slaughter of my own animals when I want to make a sacrifice. And I see to it that I slaughter them in a manner that whoever is going to be the end user of that meat is going to be able to find it palatable and enjoyable. It's a sacrifice that we are making. Now, you want to come and impinge on that and say that you need to have a balance that has to be struck as to what extent are religious practices, and that they can remain operating privately and independent of government. By Jove, now please, government, don't come into the extent where you now want to tell a family how they must sacrifice the animal that they are trying to sacrifice. Because I'm reading something sinister here, Jack. You will stir the hornet's nest, and you will find it unimplementable, just as all the laws that you have today on the statute book remain unimplementable. All I'm saying, Chairperson, is that you don't have to go and reinvent the wheel. The laws, rules, regulations providing the safety of the consumer as well as the retailer and everyone is there. Get to the business of implementing the law. And it is so, Chair, that if you want to do research, it does not come cheap. But then, remember, one of the questions I always ask when we are looking at a bill which you want to make law, what are the unintended consequences? And the unintended consequences at times, Chairperson, is that it costs money to implement the law. The law currently provides for meat inspections. Of course it's going to cost you money to see that that inspection is carried out. And you need to motivate, long before the budget is presented in Parliament, about the requirement to all, the finance that you are going to require. So Chairperson, my suggestion in a nutshell is the three departments are not talking to one another. There needs to be a coordinated plan where everyone knows what his or her or which department's responsibility is, and they need to come here and tell us this is how this plan is going to be implemented. And that will cover, Chairperson, for everything that needs to be done. It must not be a piecemeal thing, Chair. And it must also give us the cost factor, Chair, so that we at Parliament can fight for the necessary budgets. Because I realize that if you want to move from here to there, it costs money. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, Mr. Cousin.
Sorry, Chair, I just wanted to refer to Brian, Chair, that Baba should be put to talk about. Brian is a form of salt. And yesterday's star, there's some studies done, and they say that for every kilogram, 30% thereof, Chair, is the content is brine. And the other 70% is real meat. And if you taste, Chairperson, a drumstick that comes from this is packaged frozen meat which is treated with brine, and try and taste another one where you had slaughtered the chicken and you've eaten that particular chop, neck, you see the difference. I'm asking health. Salt is dangerous, so says the Honourable Minister of Health, and I agree with you. What are we doing to see that this type of injection of a substance that can cause harm to the people is being allowed to be freely bought on supermarket shelves throughout the country? Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, thank you all the presenters, especially because we don't have them now and then in these cities. Chairperson, to protect the consumers, which they have the right, you know, to choose what they want to eat, what they do not want to eat. Maybe the proposal if the labeling can be, you know, fair and straight, so that people must have choice. If this mixing donkey, water buffalo, horses, what, kangaroo, what is inside, the labeling should have, you know, said that the labeling have to say that, so that innocent consumers. Some of our people are not even from school. But if the labeling can explain or there is a mixture of this and this, maybe that can solve the problem. Unlike you just buy, and I'm not ready to eat it. No. Because I have to eat what I like, you know. In our culture, I know that I eat chicken, horse. I don't eat in my culture, but I know that others, they do eat, but I don't eat it. Beef, yes. Sheep, yes. Goat, yes. And the other poultry, like, yes, I don't eat. But others, I don't eat. Really, I don't eat. I was not taught from my upbringing to eat them. But now, I find myself eating everything, which is wrong. We should know and have a choice when I buy my things. I feel I have the right to know and have a choice that this thing, I don't like it. I will not buy this, I will buy that one. And look, these things are found especially in this meat. And sausages. Sometimes you find that those things are very cheap. Even the poor of the poorest, they are able to buy these things, not knowing what they are buying, because they are looking for the cheapest. They are looking for the cheapest, not knowing what. they should have a strong plan because to work together, because their issues are overlapping to one another. And to say the DNA is very expensive, Jefferson, we do have our universities, AR. Why can't they work with this bodies? If they work together, I used to say the problem with the department is that the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. If they can try to work together to minimize what they are saying is very expensive, really I think it can help. And what else? Jefferson, even if no, I'm done.
Jefferson, thank you very much, and thank you for inviting us as the Department of Health. And I hope this is the beginning of the collaboration and working together consultatively to try to solve the problems that are facing the country. To all the presenters also, thank you very much. UWC has spoken about a fruit salad-like mixture. For instance, have you looked into the sausages and things and whatever of China? They eat a lot of snake meat. It's nice, it's tasty, and it's a good delicacy. But are there any pieces of it in the fruit salad you're talking about where there is a mixture of everything? If so, does it affect the health of the people? In fact, all of you that have spoken about things that are mixed, does it affect the health of the people? Because that's what we would like to know. When it comes to us as parliamentarians, chairperson, we make the laws. When we make the laws, do we ever try to find out if there is a budget to implement those laws? Secondly, do we find out if there is a ways and means to ensure implementation of those acts, and who will actually be responsible for implementation? And also, I hope the department will raise their voices if the acts that we've made and we said they would be implemented are not implemented, and actually tell us what part is not implemented so that we relook into those acts. The other issue that I would like to mention, much as we talk about, Professor, you were talking about the Department of Health having come to you without funds. We've got a research department within our department. That is the Department of Science and Technology. Has it ever been brought into the picture, particularly the CSIR from the Department of Research and Technology? In health, they've got MRC. Yes, it's a medical research council, but would it have a role to work together with you, because it's also a research institution, and many other institutions that they've mentioned here? Maybe you as department, and maybe some of us, if and when the time comes, because there comes a time when we also look at how you spend your budget, and we've got to assist you in improving your budget. But we can never assist any department. budget unless they tell us what is it that they've done, how much of their budget they've used. I am saying that because National Treasury is there to assist as best as possible, but if you do not use your budget effectively, let me not say effectively, but if you do not use your budget for the purpose it was intended, then it will be problematic for us to do anything, including the municipalities. Sorry, Chair, maybe I'm taking a bit too long. Department of Health, you're telling us of the Act of 1972. Do you think it is still wholly relevant or it needs to be relooked at for the health of South Africans? Slaughtering. We know that. Now, Chair, I don't know how to say it in English, but there are those animals, which cows and things, that just die. And if they just die, we slaughter them. But we ever, as the various departments, known about those, so that even before people begin to share them, we are aware that that has happened and what problems are there in those animals which died on their own. Chair, for now, I think I asked what I want to ask, but it's quite a lot, but I think that's enough fruit salad. Thank you,
Chair. That's for now. Okay, Mr. Fondale.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, there's a saying that says, if you like sausage, you shouldn't go into the kitchen where it's made, you know. But we have entered into that kitchen, and we've opened this Pandora's box to find out what is in this sausage that we eat. Now, I also hear from the professor from the UCT that they say, when they do the DNA profiling, they have a database for which they compare it. Now, is that database very complete? Does that include DNA, say, from rhinos or elephants or hippopotamus or even maybe dog, you know? Some people have also been saying that people are slaughtering dogs and putting it in meat and everything else. So we need to know that, if it's also included in that. If you can set our mind at ease. You know, and then when I was at the butchery, I worked in Kells River, and they had this butchery across the road, and then this truck stopped there, and it delivered like bags that looked like dog food. And then I went in there, I was very curious, so I went to look when they were making the mince and the sausage. It's like a pellet that they put into the sausage, which absorbs all the water, and it builds the body of the sausage. It's like looks like a wooden pellet. And then they put lots of water in the meat, and that water mixes with the blood, and that blood and water gets absorbed into this little wooden block, and then it looks like it's a lot of meat, but actually it's just a lot of wood with a flavor of blood inside. So, yeah, no, I've seen it with my own eyes, that's why I'm asking it, is that allowed? Would you find that? Or the DNA obviously wouldn't find that, they would just find the blood and the water inside the wood block that now looks like meat. So we also would like to know if that practice is allowable. Maybe the department allows it, or the Department of Health, there's regulations to... Huh? Oh. And then, you know, the other professor also said that he is very confident that all the meat that is imported into this country is well inspected, and we know exactly what it is. Well, we in the committee have been grappling with this fact, and we have been finding out that everything that's going out from South Africa to overseas is very well inspected. We worry about the people in the rest of the world's safety and their health, but we don't worry about our own health because we don't inspect anything that comes into this country. And you are saying, well, you are quite happy that it is done. Now, I would also like to know... do you know that for a fact, or is it just something you heard and now you are making some comment on it? Because If it is something you know for a fact, then maybe I will also be a little more at ease on it. And then we also have heard that, you know, no inspections are made at food processing places. We don't have people or inspectors employed by the department that actually goes around to inspect slaughtering places. We expect the slaughtering house to have somebody there to say that they actually pay in. And then he says, well, everything is hunky-dory. But we don't have anybody else to go and police that because there wasn't budget or something, you said. So maybe if you can answer us, how many of these inspectors do we actually have? Do we have one, or two, or 10, or 100? I mean, no exact figures, just a ballpark figure. Do we have people like this? I mean, you talk about the act and what they should be, but you don't tell us what is actually there on the ground. Because we all know in this country that we have beautiful plans, very good laws, but then we don't implement it. So it's worth nothing. Thank you.
Mr. Singh?
No. Ms. Justine was looking at DA test. So you... Okay, thank you.
Ms. Jane, I also heard that. I was just a bit worried about it. Chairperson, yes, I agree with most of my colleagues. We don't need another plan. We need implementation. I'm really concerned that we have to get... I want to thank the two universities that did this test for us. When I heard about what is happening in Europe, I asked a question to the Department of Health. It was in January, February. How many tests have we done in South Africa? I haven't received the answer. So I assume we didn't do any testing, so otherwise I would have received an answer by now. I would follow up with the question section why I haven't received an answer from the Department of Health on inspections of meat services specifically. And while we're on this chair, we're speaking about meat, and I know the focus is on meat, but what is the rest of the food of in South Africa? There's thousands of other things that we eat on a daily basis, and it's not inspected. And I can tell you, Chair, because I live in a very small town, no inspector ever comes to any store in my area. Never. Even if we ask the municipality to send someone because I see dates of a food that has expired and things that's not going well, they just don't send anyone because they don't have the money. So, you know, it's all good and well. And I know the rest of my department and the department that we don't want to have another law passed in this portfolio if we can't have the compliance with that law. It doesn't mean anything. We're wasting our time. It costs taxpayers' money to have these acts. And then what? Nothing. Chair, I think another point that we haven't tackled here is why do we find this other meat in whatever that's not supposed to be in that process meat? It's cost. It costs the person that do that less to put whatever they put in there that's supposed to be in there. And I think that's the important fact for specifically for the consumers. And I want someone to do us the cost analysis of that. If it says it's supposed to be beef or whatever and something else is in there, the percentage of that and the cost factor, because then they are cheating the consumers on that. Especially if it's something that's imported that's very cheap from another country and we import cheap meat and replace it with something that we think is some kind of meat that's more expensive. So I think we must look at the cost factor of that. Shane, then just a few questions that I have. The first one also to I think it was the University of the Western Cape that says they didn't have all the reference material. That's also my question to the Department of Health. If you're supposed to test these things and no one can find reference material in the country, how did you test it compared to what? I think my colleague, Honorable Van Dalen, mentioned that. You know, we don't even know if there's somewhere, I think the Department of University of Stellenbosch did mention there were 100 contained undeclared meat species. Or something like that. I want specifically what does it mean? Don't we have something to test it against, or what does that specific reference mean? The undeclared meat species. What does that mean specifically?
specifically. Chairperson, I've asked the department what have they done since the new labelling in place, how many tests have they done, where have they done it, and then the most important part, Chair, what happens if someone is fined not compliant? What kind of penalty are put in place? Because I can promise you, you will put a strict penalty against one or two people and people will stop it, because everyone will know, you will come and do inspections, no one will know when and where, you just do it every now and again and put a strict penalty in place and people won't do it, because it the cost factor will be a problem. So what has the department done so far? Then she was something that I've been on and on and on, and the department knows about it. I like the University of Stellenbosch, which says self-regulation. I've been on the self-regulation thing now for a year. Big companies will not want their names drawn through the mud. So let's start with the things that we can implement. To do one or two or three tests in a province throughout the year and do something with the person who's found guilty. Otherwise, we can talk about this forever and ever. We don't have to do thousands and thousands of tests, and that costs us a lot of money, but at least do something. Then, Jefferson, it was also mentioned by the Department of Health, and it's something that's been bothering me, this thing of traces. Traces can be like, you've just moved the meat from one store to another and there was some other meat there previously and it wasn't washed well or something. So how do we fix this thing of finding traces of something in another meat? That kind of thing is, I think, is very important. And I think most of the tests, specifically by the Western Cape, found traces, if I'm not correct. I think the Biltong tests were a bit different, but the other ones was traces. So if we take out the traces part and just massive quantities of something else that was found, how big is that percentage? If we can get some kind of an idea on the difference between those two. Chair, I won't speak about the municipal services. As far as I'm concerned, they don't really function. And then, again, back to the Department of Health. I think if you could tell me, with the tests that you received yesterday, what are you going to do about it? What is your next step? Are you going to make it public? Will we know where did you find it? Which tests were done? I understand the university doesn't want to give the information out because that was not their, it's also not their job to police it. But what is the department now going to do after they found that people were not compliant? Then the Department of Agriculture, Chair. I see there, it says at the port of entry they inspect each consignment. What does the inspect mean? Do you look at the paperwork? They said they look at the paper, what, where, who's going to do it? Or do you sometimes actually test it to say that this is specifically what is in there? And also on that document that you get from, does it say, for instance, what is it going to be used for? Because we now have water buffalo and we have kangaroo meat and whatever floating around. Do it specifically say what is it going to be used for, where is it going to, so that you can trace that. Chair, and then on that, the illegally imported water buffalo, I think the Dr. Morisani mentioned that. Do we know that it was illegally imported because there was no illegally? It was legally imported. Okay, then on that, do we know what it was supposed to be meant for, and could we trace that? I think that's all that I wanted to say, Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Gale.
Thank you, Chair. I think my colleagues have said quite a lot. Chairperson, what is important is that if I go into a supermarket and I buy something, want to buy meat, I must know what I'm buying, what I'm eating. You are right there, Prof. That is what is important. If there's dog meat, I must know there's dog meat in there. That is the bottom line. And
That's the poorest of the poor. Now, your ports of entry, are they properly monitored? Why do I say that? And you remember, because I've always been talking about this, there is a lot of meat that's imported, that's cheap from New Zealand, which is only fed only. And we're talking about a healthy nation in South Africa. Drop and buy your box of it. You won't get it here at this supermarket. Mr. Banga is right. You'll get it at the locations or the small towns. That's where you'll get it. Now you ask yourself a question, why is it given, is it going to these small towns only in Chesterfield? Then you've got chicken, you know. There's one shop in my area in Umtata where I got them eating the chicken with a 4 pound hammer.
Yeah.
With a 4 pound hammer. They were eating with a 4 pound hammer. With a 4 pound, and it was being sold to the poorest of the poor. We're sitting with a nation that's unhealthy. Our youth is unhealthy. What is important is healthy for our people? That's the first question that we need to ask. Is that healthy or not healthy? You know, Jefferson, Utan Makwetu from the PAC, he said he went to China. China. So when I got there, luckily, I saw the carcass of dogs in it. And then I took a decision that I'm only going to eat salads here. Because I don't want to see myself eating the wrong meat. Now, agriculture using that research, what has been research is edible. It's not about being edible. It's what I want to eat. What I want to have on my plate. It's what that poor person wants on his poor plate. There's a religion, yes. You know? It's what I want on my plate. And South Africa is a dumping ground. Talking about the chicken, yesterday is a star or business day. There's a lady who bought a leg of a chicken. And she put it in the microwave. Yeah. So it was nice and decent. 5 minutes when she took it, shrunk. It was only bone. There was hardly any meat there. It was all the brine you're talking about, and you know.
Sure.
We need to be protected as consumers. Now, the problem here is agriculture and DTI. You know where your problem is? Previously, Chairperson, sorry to mention this, the previous government, there's some good and bad things about the previous government. I remember once in East London, where they went into a supermarket, the meat health inspectors going to inspect, and they took the whole fruit, the whole stuff in the kitchen, they went to throw it away because it was unhealthy. You don't see that happening. Now, it's either you don't have proper skilled people in your municipalities. I've never seen it happening in Umtata. I've never seen it happening in all the small towns. There are no health inspectors. That is the bottom line. And it's costing the government more money. It is cheaper than to use the researchers from the university. It is cheaper because it's costing you a lot of money. How many young kids have got high blood pressure? Young, 18 years. How many have got sugar? It's because of what you are eating. That is the bottom line. It is because the laws are there. They good laws that we put in the chapters, they the best laws, but laws mean they are meant to be implemented and monitored. And that is not happening at all. We can have how many laws if you don't implement and monitor those laws, then you're sitting down with a major problem. And then the coordination of these departments. You see, as they're working in a silo, DTI in a silo, agriculture in a silo, you don't need to work in a silo. You need to work together, have an integrated approach on this matter, because this matter is affecting the country, it's affecting our people, it's affecting our youth. We are a development state, and we're supposed to be development in what we are doing. You work in silos even with your own provinces. That is the truth of the matter. You know, Jefferson, we've spoken to him, that the province is doing its own thing there. You don't know what's happening in the province. The municipal local government is doing its own thing there. We said on many times of agriculture person that this department needs to have a skills audit. You remember, Chairperson? So the
bills are required. If this department had done what we have said, what we are saying, that they must have the proper skills so that they can then influence the university and the institution of higher education. These are the skills that the country needs. We don't have health inspectors. That's the bottom line. That is, we can talk. We do not have these health inspectors. Go to the small inspectors. Whatever inspection is done here in the metro, even here in the metro, is done in town, not in the location. Let us be very clear, Professor. It's not being done in the room. If you have to do your research, go down to the small towns and to the you'll find more than what you've got now. You'll find that we are eating dog meat as well, and cat meat, rats and everything. There is no proper monitoring. That is the problem. And the problem is the skills. We've been talking to you. We need the skills audit. We got kids out there who are taking the wrong direction in education and all that, but you got to pave the way as departments what skills are needed in the country. That is where the problem is. Local level, there's no inspection at all. Nothing. Yes, I'm there at local level. What I would suggest, what would help immediately, is together with the provinces, do some random inspections in these small towns. Do random inspections in these locations. Just do that and you'll see what first you pick up there. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chairperson.
I think my colleague has actually touched the areas. Because when the department is talking about contamination, there's a difference now between contamination and because I think professor from UWC actually showed us the percentages of those meats that were not intended to be in that particular product. So we can't call that contamination. And also, as you said, we should ease the way forward. I think the department should here and now tell us how many meat inspectors are they going to employ, because there is a lot of the lack of implementation. It has been forced. No inspection whatsoever in these abattoirs. So we need the department to tell us how many in the time frame. And also the cabinet, as it has resolved to request for the investigation, what is the time frame? Thank you.
We are only allowing
before they could maybe sort of
as far as it is, they still continue allowing customers or consumers to take those from the shelves. If you go back to complain, then you are kicked out. Don't get recorded. What's the role of trade industry with regards to making fallouts on those chairperson? I thank you.
There are a few areas, some of which we have touched on in the past. They talk to abattoirs, the registration and the inspection of such. It's a matter that we spoke about earlier on. I think sometime last year, October, November. Frankly speaking, we were not able to get much feedback. There were some that are not registered. And there was a discussion in that regard. I think that would be important that we get such a feedback, Dr. Mutisane. As I said, it talks now to both the registration and the inspection. And then I guess it would be a collaboration with the health department. The matter related to traceability, food control and labeling and testing, it's a matter that transcends, you know, a number of departments. I think the point raised by Mr. Abram is taking us forward in getting a sense of such a collaboration. Was fundamentally to that also, or related perhaps, is an issue related to the research capacity. To an extent wherein you talk about the budget within the respective departments and the collaboration. Granted, you have an issue of working in silos within the department, you know, protecting the tabs, you know, fish of the department. I think it should also be one of those issues that we really see, we should see, you know, a serious collaboration among the department. I think we even did mention at some point that the universities are here. They have serious research capacities. As to what extent are we making use of such research capacity, a big question mark. We talk about being expensive on some of these issues, but here is capacity that is literally scattered all over, and the impact in which it can make is minimal. Now these are the kinds of issues. I think let's follow what Mr. Abram was saying. Let's get a game plan as to how best we move forward on some of these issues. I think in the main, what we are talking about here is the type of a consumer that we have in our country. It's not your activist type of a consumer. I think issues of this nature, we have a consumer in our country that is very much laid back, especially the poorer communities. No, it's fine, you can keep me, it's okay. Type of an attitude. Precisely because, you know, you have a consumer either which is not educated, and as a result of that, you have that consumer which is not active to say, no, this is my right. As a result, you know, we literally find ourselves in situations. I did want to raise something on drying of our poultry. The implications, financial implications on any of these legislation is usually something that is mentioned at the back of any, you know, proposed, you know, legislation. But as to what an extent you are able to see such, I think in the main, members, it is a matter related to regulation. That's where the detail is. Often, in fact, not even often, on all accounts, upon any legislation having been passed through, the department has got, I think this is a matter that we really need to change in our systems. Because these regulations are literally done away from us. In
and they are implemented as such, away from us. We never get to see the light of those regulations coming back to us, and we being taken on board about those regulations. I think that's one other major, you know, flaw in the system. And often some of those regulations, they are literally sponsored around November, December time when everybody is away, only to find those regulations when you come back around January, February in the year. It's a big flaw that we really need to look into. Two major issues that we are having as challenges in implementation of any legislation. In this instance, it is your health inspector. In agriculture, it is your extension service officer. Without that extension service officer, you are literally not going to be able to achieve your intended objectives of growing our culture and transforming of agriculture. Truth be told, that's a fact. I think that's what is coming from members here. So I just thought that perhaps you know, lifting some of those issues, you know, becomes quite critical. But at the end of the day, I think the issues that are raised from members here, some of them have been responded. I didn't hear much from UWC as to why did you go through such an exercise. The points are very clear from Stellenbosch, unless I've missed the issues. One of the issues, you know, raised by Stellenbosch talks about compliance by the industry, talks about public debate, talks about other related issues that are economical in nature, cheaper protein source and so on and so forth. So these are the kind of issues as we are saying, you know, that we really need to look into, especially as it relates to collaboration among the departments and also critically the type of consumer that we have in our country. I think that education that we spoke about when we're listening, it becomes quite important. There was an apology from some of our members last flight, and those, it's Easter time, and it is also holiday time. So when we see some of them leaving us, they are fine. They have an excuse as to. Mr. Fandala, you want to have a last bite, and especially as you take us forward.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I was thinking while you were talking as well, you know, if we make legislation, it's always out there, what is the budgetary implication of that legislation we make? And one in Parliament would think that that would be, that they can implement the acts or the laws that are passed by Parliament, but it now sounds like there is nothing like that. It comes afterwards, so we need to look at that differently, as you were saying. But I want to think if we can resolve as a committee that we get a comprehensive, coordinated, and integrated report with recommendations to rectify this issue. I mean, if all these people go and sit together in a room and come up with a report, not only to the department, but the health and everybody that is in their specific silos, and that they come back to this committee with a report, but very importantly with recommendations how we are going to fix this problem. And then, you know, and maybe and we can resolve as a committee that, you know, the budgets must be made available to implement this National Food Health and Safety Act, because it must be implemented and there must be money for it. We can't have an act on the shelf and it's not being implemented. And nobody should come to Parliament and tell us there's no money. I mean, then what have you done to get the money? Please come and tell us where we must go and source the money. Then we'll go and find it.
Thank you, Mr. Pantel. I thought you were going to bring something fresh on the way forward. Important issues, of course. Members, let's allow the department, if we can quickly respond to the issues. If you can also be pointed without really taking much of the time. Any comments? Let's start from behind. In other words, from DAF and then health and to the issue.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair.
From.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable members.
without going back to the specific issues that were raised by honorable members, I want to maybe confirm that with the questions from Nkosi Kobekulu, it is true that the issue of the horse scandal in Europe brought back the research that was conducted by some of the universities before the scandal of the European horse meat issue. But what I wanted to confirm is we deliberately spoke to Europe and then tried to find out what was the actual issue and how we were to detect this issue. But they've indicated that the same conclusion that we have arrived at as a department and as government, that it is mainly a labeling issue. It was not a safety issue. And that is not to say that the Honorable Banga, that we are condoning the fact that there was mislabeling. We are in agreement that indeed there is a problem that the consumers were not aware of what they are eating. And we agree that there was non-conformance to the labeling laws. And we agree that there is a need to plug the hole in terms of the mislabeling that has been taking place. And maybe going back to Honorable Nkosi's issue, we as officials, we also find ourselves in a very difficult situation because industry comes to us to say that we have identified a need to import certain meat products. Of course, maybe going back to Mr. Banga's issue, Honorable Member Banga, when as officials we are seen, we are expected not to block trade and processing per se. And if we say no to importation of kangaroo meat from Australia, we might be taken on from a point of view of law if we don't have sufficient reason to say no if the meat is safe. And that is the argument from which we are coming from as department. And we still emphasize that it is important that the public knows what they are consuming. We are not by in all or at all trying to say that we are going to be taking over religious slaughter. We understand that it is an cultural slaughter. In fact, the law, our Meat Safety Act, sort of exempts cultural slaughter, but we are saying from the debates that have been going on, particularly since the Orion issue has surfaced, we see the need to be able to have a hand in terms of monitoring what is going on from the self-regulation point of view, Honorable Member State, that if there is a Jew community that would like to control the kosher slaughter or the Muslim slaughter, we need to ensure that it is safe, but we don't want to necessarily interfere with the processes that are actually being applied. But we want to emphasize from a point of view of the Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries that we also are very concerned about the slaughter processes. We don't condone a chicken being hit with a 5-pound hammer. We want to make sure that the animals being sentient beings, they are treated properly. They are not necessarily subjected to unnecessary cruel practices. And I just want to reassure Honorable Member Ngobo that there are some of the animals that may be approved for slaughter somewhere else that are not necessarily approved for slaughter in our country. And then we don't, for instance, have provision for slaughter of dogs and things like that. I want to reassure Honorable Member Van der Leyen that we do inspect all consignments that come, and Honorable
microbiological samples to test for microbiological levels in conjunction with the Department of Health. And then we also take into consideration the requirements in terms of, for instance, if irradiation is prohibited, we will not encourage any products to be irradiated because we understand the complications that can come about with that. Honorable Chair, I'm not trying to answer to everything, but I think the presentation from the DTI also did refer to issues of penalties as prescribed by the National Consumer Protection Act. What I would like the two universities to indicate to honourable members is whether the studies that have conducted are quantitative or qualitative. But what we're trying, my understanding is even in the study by the University of the Western Cape, there was no indication of how much anti-glass substance is in a particular, say, sample. Meaning that they cannot say that there was 90% beef, from my understanding, and 10% horse or something like that, and which is a very important thing. And that is also bringing us back to the issue of the traces, as we have been trying to present. And I'm afraid of saying something for fear of being seen to be very insensitive, because we were arguing from the point of view of science that if we were to ask if it was possible that because human beings were handling the meat, if the test was to also look at the possibility of finding DNA, whether it would have been possible to find human DNA in those meats. But of course, we are not in that field. But what the argument that would come up is the fact that we are finding traces of human DNA in that meat does not mean that we are eating human flesh. And that is the most important thing. And of course, I want to emphasize, Honorable Chair, that we are not saying we are condoning finding those traces. Very important that the processes adhere to as prescribed by the Food Staff Cosmetics and Disinfectant Act and the Health Act. I will leave the rest to my other colleagues to respond. And maybe before I conclude, because it is very important to also refer to the debate that has been going on in the papers recently on the brining issue. I saw the papers that honorable members have referred to, and for once, I think we should agree that all the departments of health, the Department of Trade and Industry, under the auspices of the National Consumer Regulatory, NCRF, have conducted extensive research with the ARC to look at the levels of allowed brining. And we owe the Honorable House a report on that. And of course, we were not in agreement with industry on how much can be allowed. That it is preferred that maybe as little brining as possible be done. But of course, we can agree that there hasn't been enough monitoring as to how much salt solution is being injected into our meat, and we agree that this has caused a lot of damage to the industry, but also a lot of public outcry, and may as well indicate that there are health concerns, although there is an argument from a point of view of industry, considering that the salt content may also be contributing to some of the ill effects, like the high blood pressures and so on. I'm not a medical doctor, so I'm not the one who should be pronouncing on this particular issue. But there is a report that I believe we'll be sharing with the portfolio committee if we are given time to do so. I do have colleagues.
that time we have indicated that we were still going through the written comments and so on, and since then we've had quite a number of interactions with the industry, and we are at a stage where a recommendation in this regard is being concluded and will be submitted to this committee very soon. Then, Honourable Chair, there was then a question about how many inspectors we actually have in the country as far as the control of the abattoirs. As of September 2011, we have indicated that we had over 84 meat inspectors that are employed by the government, nationally and in provincial governments, and 21 vets who specifically work in the abattoir control or in the veterinary public health arena. Those are the people who then they don't reside full-time in the abattoirs, but they are attached to 10 or 15 abattoirs that then they receive, they visit on a regular basis as determined in their own program. Over and above that, I think, Honourable Chair, then you're aware that in terms of the day-to-day meat inspection, that is the one that is currently at this present moment being conducted by the private sector. Thank you, Chair.
Help. Chair and Honourable Members, if I may, just a bit of clarity with regards to the issue of prime. Dr. Mulisani alluded to the report which we owe the committee, and that is with regards to the study that we as have commissioned to the ARC. I just have to make that clarity that we would be giving a report on the study that we had commissioned. But, Honourable Members, I think it's also important that on this particular issue, the three departments have worked collaboratively and consultatively in terms of how we handle this issue. On the 28th of last month, we had a workshop with industry wherein we are working towards finalization and regulation change with regards to the level of brining in so-called IQFs, that's the potions. The existing legislation that we have is applicable to whole chickens, and we are trying to finalize levels for IQFs. Most importantly, brining in terms of our industry is meant to add flavor to chicken, but we have informed them that we don't believe that it should go as high as 30, 40, whatever percentage. And therefore, the need to have it limited to a certain level. I think perhaps as time goes on, we'll come back and bring the comments from the design and set in terms of what we hope will be the final amount. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Many of the things have been responded to. We take home the fact that the delivering regulations have not been implemented as well as they should have been after 1 year, and we will go and work on that. We would just like to also respond to the question on the question that came from the Honourable Member as to how many tests have been done. We'll go back and respond to that question. We will also... the question was whether these results will be published. Yes, this is public money we have to publish. The issue around the wood-like substance that was found in meat, probably that was, we think that was soya pellets, which is allowed, provided it is disclosed in the UK. And then the it is quite clear to us that we have to engage with our principals on the delegations to municipalities, as members have indicated. We have to go back and relook at the functionality of that system and how best we can, but it's not something we can as officials tell you, obviously. We'll go back to our principals and look at that issue. The second issue, the last issue I want to mention is that the good manufacturing practices is in our court, and that's something we'll go and strengthen and have discussion. discussions with industry and ensure that everybody knows. I think also there's an element here of informing the communities better, the public better, on everything we do in simple language that is understandable, that these are your rights to know. These are things you should know around labeling. What does labeling mean? Food labeling mean in very simple terms. I don't think we did that very efficiently. And we admit that we'll go back and look at it. And lastly, we will engage with the universities on how we refine the instruments we use to respond to the challenges we have. Thank you, Chair.
Titia? Comment?
Thank you, Chair. We're taking note of the comments made about the publication of the notice at this stage. And just wish to explain that the way that the Consumer Protection Act has been crafted, it is in such a way that consumers, hence we talk about consumer education, need to bring up certain issues for such issues to be reacted upon to. Hence the minister has given those powers. Day by day, the minister, the society is faced with scams, if I may call them, and it is only then that the minister will then identify, for example, that these are the issues whereby a particular notice has to be issued. It is an overarching piece of legislation permeating various numerous industries, and sometimes it may not be always practical to permeate and start investigations in all the thousands of industries unless consumers come forward and lay complaints in respect of particular matters. With regard to the question that the Chair has raised as to, the Honourable Member has raised as to what does the DTI play in the expiry of stuff that's on the shelves. We have various sections to deal with this matter in terms of the Consumer Protection Act. One of them is Section 55, which guarantees the consumer's rights to safe goods and quality goods. It basically provides that the goods must be reasonably suitable for the purposes for which they are intended. But what will then happen if this is not, you know, happening? The commissioner may actually, in terms of Section 60, to carry out a recall program in consultation with the relevant regulatory authority. Otherwise, the commission can go into a particular producer and actually remove from the shelves all the goods that have actually expired. But of course, that is the work of the agency, enforcement agency, which is the National Consumer Commission. But also, there's another third option. Before a matter can actually be referred as a complaint to the National Consumer Tribunal, whereby the commission may actually issue a compliance notice. In other words, the commission can say to a particular producer, we don't want you to be placing on display goods that have expired. And if you are in breach of this compliance notice, then we may apply directly to the National Consumer Commission for an administrative fine. And that is in terms of Section 100. So there are various options to deal with unsafe goods as provided for within specific sections of the National of the Consumer Protection Act. And just a last comment, as I've indicated earlier, sometimes the enforcement agencies, the police, the Competition Commission, many of the enforcement agencies will actually rely on the laying and opening of complaints before they can sometimes react. Yes, some of them actually have powers to initiate investigations. Hence, we agree wholeheartedly with the chairperson who says that we need a consumer who's more proactive. Sometimes in consumer circles, you know, this person is referred to as a pro-consumer, as somebody who takes up the initiative to complain, to test, and to seek means of redress. And that is where that is why, as the teacher, I will also emphasizing the issue of education, advocacy, and our youth. Thanks, Chair.
You want to? Okay.
Honourable Chair, members, we're just trying to indicate in terms of the marching orders that we received from this Honourable House that as departmental officials, we are committing that we will
By that time, some of us shall not be here.
Sorry about that. We're guided by the house chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. As I indicated earlier, I come from the agro-processing directorate within the Department of Trade and Industry with the responsibility of industrial development and the various subsectors that are affected in terms of general food safety and quality that have been raised will be the industries that we mostly work with. However, in terms of the actual issues on the specific requirements around the quality, then those responsibilities lie outside of the department. We work very closely with our colleagues in the various government departments to address the issues. And of us at the DTI, we still believe that in line with international standards, the question of food safety and control agency or format that brings together the issues around the implementation from the various government departments, the fragmentation that we've seen, that needs to be strengthened and that needs to be consolidated. And it becomes a critical, important factor, not only for imports that come into the country, but as well as the quality of the food that the South African consumer puts on the table, given that the consumer is price sensitive. Anything that is cheap, the consumer will buy, but it does not necessarily make the most profit. From a trade perspective, we do engage with the traders, the big four retailers, but of course the issue then comes when you deal with the lower in the rural areas, as honorable members have said. Do we have the capacity? And I think that's the work that I think Dr. Mdisan indicated, that we will have to work together very closely to come up with a better plan in terms of how to implement, and the Department of Trade and Industry stands to support resource and otherwise the two departments in implementing those programs. Thank you.
Okay. Let's hear the industry.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman and members of the committee. I think the fact that we are here today shows the fact that we support the whole issue regarding food safety. You will recall, Mr. Chairman, and that is that we have been here on one or two previous occasions regarding issues to do with meat safety. There are basically four structures within the state that address these issues. We have Department of Agriculture, the Department of Health, we have DTI, we have SAN 289, which is to do with processed feeds and processed foods and canned foods. You'll recall, Mr. Chairman, and that is that in 2011 when we came to this house regarding the whole issue of that importer and the fact that meat products were being relabeled, there was a milk powder that was unfit for human consumption that was imported and was relabeled as fit for human consumption. There were products that transgressed cultural beliefs and cultural eating patterns. We went out and got an interdict to stop that, which we were granted. And we stopped the whole process of relabeling imported products. This was reported to the Hawks. Mr. Chairman, we had all the details, we had all the proof, and today nothing has happened. Nothing has happened. We've got this importer that he's still carrying on with his trade. Now, when it comes to these type of issues, we have cowboys in the industry. And if cowboys out there can see that somebody with the enormity of the transgressions that were implemented go unchecked, okay, we are going to get more cowboys. Now, what I would like to say, Mr. Chairman, and that is that within the Health Act, that grants the minister the ability to appoint different structures to apply the Health Act. Presently we know, and that is that this specific aspect
suggesting, and that is that what Professor Lo Hoffman and his colleagues from the University of Western Cape have come up with is only a second red light that's flickering. We brought up the first red light with this thing about the Orion case, and that has not been addressed. Those people have not been prosecuted. Now, my proposal is, and it links in with what Dr. Morisani said, the industry would like to say, we do not need any more legislation. There is sufficient legislation. The legislation must now be applied. So we would like to propose, Mr. Chairman, and that is that an interministerial committee has been appointed, formally appointed, and that interministerial...
I'm tempted to say stick to your day job.
Pardon?
I'm tempted to say stick to your day job.
Well, unfortunately, this has become a large portion of my day job, Mr. Chairman.
Otherwise, you're treading on a very thin line.
Okay, I think you don't realize that we're serious about it. But the fact is that whatever Dr. Mike Modisani and his grouping would like to propose, there must be a compliance component. Because unless we have the compliance component, then we are sitting with legislation that is of little consequence, because we are not actually addressing cases. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The important issues you are raising relate more to cases that have been reported in this house to an extent that there is no action upon those being taken. It's a serious indictment on the part of this house and the part of the department. To an extent, I'm even tempted to allow the department to respond to those issues. I always believe that whenever there is any issue raised about irregularity or impropriety, that responses are given on the spot. We had at one point a case which we still have, I must say. One company in the West Coast called Kalahari that has defrauded SARS with a fraudulent tax clearance certificate. And you have a department that says to you, no, we're going to investigate. What are you going to investigate? Because here you have a company that has defrauded SARS. It's a criminal offense. And any criminal offense is punishable. There can never be any investigation, no amount of such investigation can allow you to veer off from your responsibility. Now that's how I really would wish things to happen from time to time. And we are not going to have an exception here. Before the universities can come through, if we can just have a quick response to those issues raised. One of them talks to Orion, and the second one,
Mr. Chairman, didn't bring up a second one. I just mentioned the fact that this function has been delegated to the lower levels into the local authorities, and as we know, that there are a lot of them that are defunct structures. In other words, this type of...
I'm referring to the matter that you referred to the Hawks, and as such, is that your Orion still?
That's the Orion one.
I would request Dr. Songabe to maybe indicate what has been done related to Orion.
Thank you, Dr. Majisani. Honorable Chair, honorable members, the issue of Orion has been
in as far as the laws that we put jurisdiction on, they, there are no illegal activities happening at this stage. Thank you, Chair.
Those are the kinds of issues that I think some of the members were referring to. What happens when an Orion erupts? And all what we hear is that the company is still registered with DTI. The company is still registered in accordance with the health department. It's business as usual. Dr. Musa?
I just want to try and explain and maybe try to get honorable members to understand. Whereas the honorable members are giving us powers to do certain things, when an issue like Orion is raised, we can only go back and report it to the law enforcers in terms of the police and the courts. And if our courts make a decision on the issue, we cannot subject the establishment to anything further than the ruling of the court. Otherwise, we'll be going beyond our laws. So in terms of the requirements of the registration of the facility, we didn't find anything untoward related to that. And if you remember very well, honorable members, I did indicate that the owner of Orion also had a defense. One of the issues that she related to is he's not a member of the RMIF, and the RMIF maybe had some issues against him. And I indicated that in his defense, he also indicated that there was a partner that he fired, and that partner is the one who blew the whistle after he himself had mislabeled the products for halal when it wasn't actually halal. So from our own training, we could not say whether he was telling the truth or the industry was telling the truth. So we had to depend on the decision of the court. So a decision, a final judgment was made, and from that point of view, we had no recourse to go back and harass Orion per se.
Maybe we should allow a full report on this matter. It is not, and it must never be about harassing. It can never be. In any law situation or court processes, you are also able to appeal to any court decision. So you still have a room in that regard. All what we're trying to do here, we're trying to address some of the specifics in relation to justice, either on trade or on safety of our food. That's the only bottom line in this regard that prompted us at the time to call on a briefing to this matter. So that's what I would really propose, so that we are not stuck on this matter, which has or it was not actually part of our program. It came as a by the way as we were taking our discussion forward on these issues. So that would be my view. Are you off the point? On the point? Okay.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Though it was off the point, I agree with you. But then there was the other issue that they raised, and that was that the delegated authority was delegated to local government. I mean, that is quite important to this point we are speaking today. If there are municipalities that are dysfunctional, I know you can delegate power, but if you delegate it to somebody that can't do the job, it makes you liable as well. You stay accountable for that. Although you can delegate that authority, you can't delegate the responsibility. make sure that we don't get sued for this if we delegate something to somebody that can't do it. So if the Auditor General has found that there are 85 municipalities, 85% of municipalities dysfunctional, we should revoke that, and the department should take over that control over that. I mean, in a municipality that's working, you don't need to revoke it. Obviously, it works. But if there's a place that's not working, you stay responsible. You can't delegate the responsibility or accountability.
Maybe one other thing that we might wish without having to play any politics here. You see, this thing about, you know, municipalities are being dysfunctional, it gets hammered on the head. As a result, without knowing, you will take it as a gospel truth. You know, that perception no longer a perception but a fact. So that I'm sure you might have been responding to specific issues, the Auditor General, but let's not hammer on it, because that's not our terrain, as it were. Because if we are continuing to do that, especially in public, the public easily can be misled. Now, that's the issue. Perhaps those issues that don't belong here also. Mr. Banga?
Chair, mine, I think what we need to do is to focus really. I think all the other issues are peripheral issues that deal with the broader debate that we're dealing with. Let us agree. Let us not accept what the doctor is saying about 5 months. Let us agree on 3 months. But let us move further and say we must not say the departments must go back. They will continue to operate as silos. Let us say a joint and integrated committee of the department should then sit in this regard and look into this issue. But we must rather move and put a rider that the political principles are very important, because if this debate is at the level of the cabinet, now the political principles themselves, then you need to have an integrated arrangement to deal with these realities. It might be as it relates to the implementation of acts that regulate this. It might be with where powers are located in terms of inspections and so on. All the problems, because they would lift up the chair and bring back this report to us within a period of 2 months. But when they bring it back, I think the minister is responsible here. They must come, because amongst other things is that these things relate to the lack of implementation of legislation in which politicians are responsible for that kind of implementation. But that's what I want to propose as a way forward. But we cannot close this debate without the academics responding to a most important question, which is the most academic. Because if you say to me...
Can I continue with the meeting, if you don't mind?
Oh, okay. I wanted just to, because I don't want this to be missed when you go to them.
Oh, okay.
In particular, as it relates to an investigation and the research that is conducted as conclusive on certain other issues. Because if you say we cannot be conclusive about something, meaning the research can be disputing the outcomes of the research, in relation to these issues that relate to contamination, And the accuracy of the report in relation to the topic I am. I want to sit and go here having been convinced that what was provided as a research outcome is true and I can rely into. I will only be happy if the academics respond to that kind of a question that the department and other people continue to raise, because to me that's important. Thank you.
Professor Dr. Stellenbosch?
I think I will first defer to my colleague who is a geneticist to answer that one, because it lies more in the...
Okay, can you respond to the broader issues that have been raised?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Honourable Chairman, and the Honourable Members raised a number of issues. I think, I must now talk fast because some of the answers are long. I think first there was a question how safe is frozen meat. It is safe. Again, safe from a microbial spoilage depends on how that meat was treated and whether it was infected or not. So I can do a test now and the meat can be safe, but someone else can contaminate it and it's no longer safe. And a classical example here is the misconception of a sell-by date and a use-by date. That is something that a producer does. He would typically send samples off and say, do me a shelf life test to see how long is the shelf life stable. And you would take the meat and you would put it in the fridge and you would say, right, after 9 days, but microbial contamination was such that it's no longer safe. And then typically a supermarket would say, right, 9 days maximum, let's work on 7 days shelf life because someone will buy the meat and might keep it for 2 days in the fridge before consuming it. And it varies from product to product, but it's just an indication of safety. It's not a hard, fast rule. That's why you can never prosecute someone and say, why is that meat past the sell-by date? Because the sell-by date is a self-induced date by the supermarket or the shop. And that's one of the negative parts of doing microbial food analysis. It's just a snapshot of what happens that time. If I work into a factory, and per chance a meat sample I randomly select to test, or the meat sample that the person doing the deboning has just picked his nose or her nose and touched the meat, I'll get a totally different microbial reading than one that hadn't. And that, unfortunately, is a problem that we have there. I think, again, just to mention, the EG did mention it, the wood in the meat product. Legally, we're allowed to that. She's quite correct. It's a pseudoprotein. And we actually add it to products so we can add water because it binds the water. At the moment, I have a number of students researching aspects like pineapple fiber and how much water can you add. That is where our study found a number of the protein allergens that weren't labeled because it's a standard process to use these forms. We're legally allowed, or the industry is allowed to use them. Again, we come back to the industry should know that. I think one of the questions that I have the whole time, and that is, why is this meat coming into the country? I think that's a fundamental question we need to ask ourselves. Because, and I think it's driven by cost. Kangaroo meat is coming into the country because it's cheaper. And we can then add it to Vienna's sausages or polonies and sell it as such. And we make a huge profit. Why do we inject chickens? Because water is cheap. And that's the bottom line. It's a financial incentive driven. So if we feel we don't want kangaroo in the meat, then maybe we must revisit the importation duties or the regulation that allows the meat to come in. But that's not, as a scientist, I'm not qualified to make those decisions. But I keep asking myself, why do we have these products in our meat? And end of the day, it's about profit. Now, when you have someone who brings in products and then turns around and says, but our designated body, I'm not a member of that body, then it takes away the power of that body for self-regulation, doesn't it? What can the meat industry forum do if someone turns around and says, I'm not a member of your body? Because it's a voluntary. So we have a lot of bodies here trying to do their best. But as correctly said, there's a lot of cowboys out there making false money. And that brings us to me, the group that's worried, and it was raised by a number of honorable members, and that is, what about the uneducated, the poor? Who's looking after them? Okay, granted, a lot of the meat, and I think the member from the Red Meat Abattoir Association can correct me here, but I think something like 40% of the animals slaughtered in this country are slaughtered in non-registered informal abattoirs or slabattoirs or just in the bush. And a lot of that meat is consumed fresh, pre-rigor sometimes. So in that sense, it is safe. There hasn't been a lot of time for microbes for you to go. But it hasn't gone through any formal outfit. We have no idea what parasites it contains or any of those aspects. Correct? What I'm more worried about is the people who sell processed meat and manufactured meat in these areas. People who are taking and selling sausage cheaply. Because how can they sell it so cheap? The only way they can sell it so cheap is when funny stuff is landing in there. And they're the ones I'm worried. As I said, I'm not worried about the supermarkets, the big guys. They self-regulate because they don't want to lose their customers. They can't afford to have a name out there that A is selling horse meat or kangaroo meat in their Buddha horse. So I'm not worried about them. I'm worried, and I think correctly, as the honourable members have mentioned, I'm more worried about the group down there. We talked to about the health inspectors from the municipalities. I tried to find out around the Stellenbosch area, and the whole budget of this, for the health inspections goes to this, inspecting the water, because it's a priority, isn't it? More people drink water, so they have to make sure the water is safe to drink. Then they don't have any money left to do any of the others. And one of the presentations had a whole list, I think there were 9 different areas, of which food safety was one of them, but water safety was at the top. So we're back again to funding. I think everyone here is trying to work together to find a solution, which is commendable. But at the end of the day, yes, we're going to come back to money. A factor that I would like to see included, maybe you could bring in the next deliberations, and that is how many health safety officers are being trained in the country. That's Tshwane University of Technology, Cape Peninsula University of Technology. It's a technological university that train these people. Are we training enough? Should we then not strategically look at maybe giving more bursaries if we need to have more of those people? But let's get some figures and numbers of people being trained. Yeah. All I do know, though, is that since this donkey scandal has come, it's made the training of these students a lot more difficult, because now suddenly a lot of butcheries won't allow them into the butcheries to do their practical. But then the question we throw back to the butcheries is, why do you have something to hide? I think, Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to address this very important committee. Thank you.
Dr. Yudhav Singh?
I'm going to reply to the questions about DNA that many members of the parliament asked. First, about your question about the contamination, and there was another question written to me, and you raised that question as well, about if our study was of qualitative or quantitative nature. I think that question only applies to the sausages, because for the biltong, carpaccio, and other delis, I physically saw those meat being sliced in front of me. So I can't talk about that as a trace or contamination, but the whole product is substituted. Now, about the sausages, I analyzed at least 2 fragments of sausage from a sausage of about 12 centimeters long. And when the 2 fragments gave the same DNA sequence, I reported only 1. Our study then was of a qualitative nature, but to try to cover the possibility of a complex mixture, we analyzed more than 1 piece of sausage. In the work that I published, I reported all the mixtures that I found, in one case, I found 4 animals in the same sausage. I don't consider that is a trace. But the product is actually a mixture of meat of different sources. Okay. And there was another question about the databases. The databases are growing by the day. And for some groups of species, I don't know why there are more scarce information about than others. But while we requested reference DNA to the zoological gardens and sand parks was because when we started the study in 2009 and we started to generate the results in 2010, there was very little information about, let's say, horse-like species in GeneBank, this major database. And there was, for instance, only 1 sequence for Cape Mountain zebra, and 1 is not enough.
And when we're comparing these, the sequences that we find in our study with those, we couldn't actually distinguish between a donkey and a zebra. So we needed more to have consistency. And then I could reconstruct those trees that you could see, and we can see that the, our samples fall well within those groups of many individual species. And there is DNA for rhinoceros and other endangered species of South Africa, certainly.
Your colleague wants to add.
I think it's very important to realize that we have a lot of genetic variability and differentiation in Southern Africa. So the database is not complete, and therefore we need more. They talk about test and the cost of the test. The test cost enormous amount of money, but the purpose of our study that somebody actually asked here was a scientific study to develop tools that we can use at a cheap rate to identify species-specific meat samples. And my colleague actually explained in one of the presentations that we can use nanotechnology for actually linking that to a kit where you can basically just take a meat sample and put it on a strip like we find the pregnancy strip test that you find, and there will be some bands. And you can then pick it up if it's horse or kangaroo or donkey, whatever it's going to be. But that costs money. And that costs people trying to invest some of that to find the end product at the end of the day. And I think there's a lot of collaboration between us and Stellenbosch University, and we would like to expand that. And I think it would be good if we can come together with the different departments to find out a specific way forward, because we need some action. Because I'm a scientist, but I'm also a consumer, and I'm very concerned about what I'm going to eat and what I'm actually not seeing on the labeling. We need to differentiate safety from mislabeling. I think a lot of people talk about food safety, acne, food safety, all different kind of things. But this is not to do with safety, it's to do with mislabeling. And that's clear. The meat products, as Professor Lou Hoffman said, is safe at the end of the day. But it's labeling that's going to be. The sensitivity of the test is good. But you talk about contamination. Maybe somebody didn't wash and then used the meat in the other part. If they wash properly and then there shouldn't be any contamination. The levels of that foreign DNA, of contaminant DNA, is going to be so low that it will not be picked up by the test that's been done. And therefore, it is important to start to qualify what is the minimum quantity that we can pick up from the DNA. It's something that researchers need to do. Maybe the kit that they're using will have a limitation. I don't know clearly about that, but there should be a limitation on that specific regard. And as Professor Hoffman said, we know that there's kangaroo meat coming into the country. We should be able to trace it to where it's going. And then we should know to test what they're doing and where there might be some mislabeling. The same with horse meat. We know there's horse meat slaughtering here and it's coming from Canada. So we need to know where it's going. And traceability there for me is important. And then you can target those places that's using those kind of meat to see if they really are mislabeling that type of issues that's there. We have the laws, okay? I'm quite confident that the Food Safety Act and all the other laws are good, but we now need to start to implement them very clearly. We should get the communities also involved. And as universities, one of the things that we do is we engage with the community. And we want to also train people in that specific regard, train people specific ways to use this enormous pool of information that the DNA can give us to use that for better, to find out new technologies, new kits that we can use there. And we would like to work with all the other people in this room to find solutions at the end of the day, because we need to find solutions very quickly, otherwise we're going to have the cowboys that's going to go and do all funny things to the meat supply.
My proposal would be as follows. We have agreed that the departments must come back to us in 3 months with a clear plan as to how collaboration is going to work out.
on a whole range of areas, whether it's going to be labeling, whether it's going to be safety, and abattoirs, research, food control, traceability, the grinding, because majority of these issues, they straddle between, you know, departments. To an extent, we have such a plan. At the end of the day, it is addressed those two major issues. One that talks to labeling, but fundamentally that talks to safety of food. Of course, a byproduct of that must always be about education of our consumers out there. It is very key. It's a very key byproduct. But that labeling and safety of food, they are the fundamentals. They are going to talk to a whole range of activities, whether you're going to talk about, you know, restoration of abattoirs and those related matters. I think those are the major issues, number one. Number two, a point is raised by Mr. Bangwa. The cabinet has taken a view on this matter. To an extent, there is a process underway led by DTI related to consumer protection in the main, which is not far from what we are talking about here. Almost everybody here who has been talking has been emphasizing on a need to get to know what is it that I am eating. And it talks of consumer protection. A point is raised, which I concur with, that says it would also be prudent on our committee here to receive such a report from the ministry and ministers responsible on these matters, on the three departments, so that we are able to get a way forward. I think the country really is owed not only education but an explanation as to how come we find ourselves as a country in this situation. Fundamentally, what you are about, Professor Ford, we must protect our own local produce. If we are not protecting our local produce, we find ourselves buying all sorts of things, as we hear, whether it is donkey, whether it is snake, and we're importing all of those kinds of things. To an extent, we have heard a discussion at DTI on matters related to subsidies and tariffs. Among others, those could be measures that are going to allow us to protect our own local produce. Very important. Just the other day, we were having a discussion about vulnerable workers, whether it's going to be farm workers or fisheries workers and so on and so forth. In a joint session with one other committee, I think it was Labour, can't remember. One other communist there, Andrew William, you know, he shocked me when he came out, you know, also we must talk about vulnerable farmers. He's a communist. To an extent, we are also talking about that. That's why we are talking about protection of our local produce. Very key and very critical. I talk on your behalf here, Professor Ford. I wonder whether in those two areas we are not concluding on our session here. Less than a minute. In fact, a few seconds.
Jay, I'm always short, you know that. Jay, I think there's one or two issues that's very important that we're missing. The first one is the latest data that the Department of Labor received yesterday. My question was regarding what will happen if someone was found now this act of
what is going to happen. They said the report will be made public, but we need to find out as soon as possible if people did transgress whatever laws was in all these thousands of laws that we have, what's going to happen. We don't have to send it to the hawks again. Something must happen. We have something in place. The second thing, Chair, that I've been asking, and you partially mentioned it now, the Department of Trade and Industry and the importation of meat. It was mentioned here. We can trace it. If we import things like kangaroo and meat traces of kangaroo, we're fine. What is the Department of Trade and Industry, or who is responsible? That must form part of the longer 3 months document that we need to find, Chair. How do we protect our environment? And it will definitely be a consumer thing because it's price-driven. They very place meat with cheaper imported meat or cheaper meat, and then they don't label it in that way. So I think the Department of Trade and Industry must bring that in specifically in their longer report, Chair.
Mr. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm pleased that we made progress. What I would like to ask, Chair, is that the departments, all of them, must also seriously look at the skills that are required, as Professor Hoffman spoke of earlier, and what is the cost of the implication thereof. We've got thousands of our young people who pass matric, who get a university entrance pass, but who are, because of various shortcomings, including finance, unable to pursue a career. And we can start flagging such people and start training such people. The other issue, Chairperson, is that the fact that they must report back in 90 days, Chair, that would take us to the last week of June. And that is just going to be before the winter recess. So we need to have that as soon before that as possible so that we can, by the time we go into recess, look at what the departments have come up with. And I want to reemphasize, it's been said already, Chair, but one needs to reemphasize this whole issue about delegated authority to the other tiers of government that are supposed to carry out the physical inspection work. I mean, where are the days when an inspector used to walk into a establishment and find that tins of fish have floated and immediately confiscate it? So we need to see, Chairperson, that that kind of thing takes place. Thank you, sir. Mr. Pandan, very last.
Yes, I just wanted to add that, you know, the department don't need to go and employ advisors. These people know what's going on. Use them. And so that you can get all the advice and when we need to go. Thank you,
Mr. Pandan. Mr. Ford?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on your last comment regarding the utilization of local produce, you must keep in mind that is 35,000 tons of beef products are imported annually. And the reason is that we do not have that supply. We are bringing in about 6,500 tons just from Namibia. Beef is also coming in from Botswana. And that is within the SACU and the SADC agreements. In other words, those products will always come in. But the fact is that we do not have that sufficient tonnage of low-grade products. 35,000 tons that comes in from overseas, basically low-grade products.
I can defeat you on that argument, Mr. Ford. Majority of our beef in this country is in the hands of your communal farmers, livestock. What are we doing to increase that produce? Exactly the point. Members, I think we have come to a point where we need to agree that we need to adjourn the session. We have made progress. We have one or two announcements before we pass. And remember, this is